It's time for Windows Weekly. We kick things off with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley with a rant about, I don't know, something. Notifications, I guess. We'll also talk about a couple of new builds that just came out. And we're going to take questions from the audience. Some really good questions, including, what was Paul's first multiplayer game? All that coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 794, recorded Wednesday, September 14th, 2022. The Fafinator. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Infrascale. Infrascale delivers industry-leading data protection through backup and disaster recovery. Visit infrascale.com/twit to sign up for a free demo and see how Infrascale protects your business today. And by Lenovo, orchestrated by the experts at CDW, to help transform your organization with Lenovo ThinkPads equipped with the Intel Evo platform for effortless connectivity and collaboration from anywhere. Learn more at cdw.com/Lenovo client. And by ClickUp, the productivity platform that will save you one day a week on work, guaranteed. Use the code Windows to get 15% off ClickUp's massive unlimited plan for a year, meaning you can start reclaiming your time for under $5 a month. Sign up today at ClickUp.com. But hurry, this offer ends soon. Okay, dozers, here's your chance. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show we cover the latest news from Microsoft. All you winners, take a look at this guy on the left. He's more of a dozer. That's PT, Paul Thurrott of Thurrott.com, LeanPub.com, and many other comms. On the right, Mary Jo Foley, all about Microsoft.com. That's a ZDNet blog, a ZDNet joint, as we say. Together, when we mush them together, you get a giant ball of Windows reportage. And that's what this show is all about.
A Windows Weekly sandwich.
A Windows Weekly sandwich. Hello, Paul.
Hello.
Are you gruntled?
I'm getting there.
Okay.
I'll be okay.
Just checking. Mary Jo Foley is also here. Paul, you should be excited. The new iPhones are here. Well, they will be day after tomorrow.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get one.
You're not?
No.
Mary Jo Foley, I know you will.
Yeah, I already ordered like four.
One of each color.
One for every member of my household. Sriracha gets one. I get one.
I'm really liking the new always on lock screen. I got like a
slide. Okay, but what about that weird button thing? The digital island or whatever that thing's called.
I'm sorry, Fantasy Island, you mean? No.
Yeah, Fantasy
Dynamic.
Island. Yeah.
Dynamic Island.
Okay.
It's the island every phone wishes it could be.
I just see that and I'm like, why?
Well, I'll tell you why. Because they got a hole punch and they don't want to admit it.
I know. That's why.
But if you're going to, I mean, look, honestly, I think it's clever of Apple to take what would be a negative and turn it into, or at least attempt to turn it into a positive.
Yeah, but this, what would be clever if they just gave it to everyone? Because whether you have a hole punch or not, wouldn't you want, why would you just have the same notifications?
We've already talked about this. For those of us with the old iPhone or an iPhone 14 or 14 Plus, it ain't a dynamic island. It'd be a dynamic peninsula because it's attached to the top of the screen. And so it wouldn't be as cool. In fact, it would just look kind of like your notch is bulging. Which no one really wants. It makes sense with the... You ask a legitimate question, which is why didn't they do it with the iPhone 14 and 14 Plus? That I don't know. That I can't tell you.
Well, you know, Apple.
That's Apple.
My only answer.
Apple. Mm-hmm. Look, I don't expect you guys to know or understand what it's like to be an Apple guy.
Well,
to live in my world,
sure.
Where everything
I just want to be in the meeting where, like, they're, you know, the Apple engineers or VPs or whatever are like, you know, everyone hates this notch thing. All the Android phones have had these tiny little hole punch things.
Yeah,
And some guy in the back's like, I have an idea. Why don't we make it so it changes size all the time and it's dynamic? And then there's all this stuff going on in the middle of it, even when you're doing something else.
Hey,
like,
hey,
let's
you.
Turn this
hey.
Thing that annoys people into something that hey. Really annoys people.
Actually, we were just before the show, we were talking about that because you were trying to, or Mary Jo was complaining about all the notifications that keep getting added to mm-hmm. your.
Yeah.
Is that in the charms bar? Is that on the, or it's on the right
charms.
There? What do they call
Come
that?
On, charms.
Charms.
It's
charms.
Leo, it's not 2012 anymore. Get
that
with the
word
program.
Is banned on this show.
Yeah. But they don't pop up. They just show up in the side there, right? Or do they
right.
pop
and
up?
And then you just see, no, you get a little notification that says now adding blah, blah, blah notification. I'm like, yeah. why? Why?
Because they think it's a smartphone. I think this is honestly
you just globally turn off notifications.
It's the smartphonification.
Because there's a couple I want.
Yeah.
A couple I want.
See, this is how they get you.
Yeah.
I know.
It's a smartphoneification yeah. of the world. Desktop.
But I don't even want most notifications on my phone.
Yeah.
You know?
No, same.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
This is every time I get a new phone, I spend the first month just turning off notifications as they happen.
Yeah. Same. In fact, for some time that was my advice to everybody. When you mm-hmm. get a new phone, is go into the notification, just disable them for everything,
yeah.
and then
yeah.
judiciously turn
so
them
you're,
on.
So you're proactive. I was reactive.
Yeah. Well, you might. I mean, look, there's some things you want notifications for texts, right?
Yeah, but you know, most notifications, I see what it is, and I'm like, really? Like I interrupted what I was doing for this.
Yeah.
You know, Amazon's like, hey, did you know we're selling a new book on Kindle? Really?
Yeah.
But then you can't.
Well, that's fascinating.
I mean, am I wrong? Yeah. You can go to the menu.
Mm-hmm.
You can
turn
but
it
sometimes
off.
Sometimes there's dots. Certain ones you want, right?
But you could say turn off notifications for individual.
That's true.
Like, okay, yeah. so I'm seeing Windows Help. I don't want Windows Hello notifications. Hello.
No.
I'm,
right.
So I'm
going to
turn
you
that
know,
off.
Did you know, Leo? Did you know?
Yeah.
You can sign in with your face.
Yeah.
Did you know?
I did know that. I do it. So why would I want notifications to remind me of that?
Right.
On the other hand, I have Discord notifications. I like those.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's things that you leave on.
Yeah. I just feel like I had it all set the exact
yeah,
way I wanted.
Right, right.
And then, like this week, I got two notifications about new notifications that I didn't even choose to yeah. add to Windows.
Yeah.
Right?
No,
I'm like, wait,
I'm
why are these on?
When I was a young man and everything was based on paper, every year the bank would give out a little calendar book. And in the calendar book, right. I'd write down people's phone numbers and obviously my meetings and whatever else I had to do. And then every year you'd get a new one, you know, and I always loved that thing. But yep. I can tell that notifications make me insane on digital devices because I've literally turned off calendar notifications.
That's one you might want.
I know.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I'll just remember.
I'll just remember.
Like,
yeah.
I can't deal with these notifications because in the beginning you're like, well, I'll turn off notifications for events that I create because I know I'm not going to, you know, forget I'm going on a flight or whatever. But after a while, I'm like, you know what?
Yeah.
I'll just look at the calendar every morning.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
you know, like I used
yeah.
to like 50 years ago or whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
there's no reason to be notified throughout the day because yeah. I have.
Well, but also
coming up. In
I'm betting you leave that on the phone. You leave them on, right?
Nope. They're
oh,
off.
You don't.
I turn
you
them
don't.
Off everywhere. Yeah.
Wow.
No, because like I said, I more than yeah. 9 times out of 10, something interrupts me, usually on a phone. Windows is a lot less frequent, but I'll look at it either way, and I'm like, no, I don't know.
I don't
whatever
that
thing
yep,
is, no.
I guess
yeah.
people would say, well, then you're not a busy man.
Really? Well, I'll put my word count up against anybody. But
no, you're writing, but you don't need
opposite.
You don't need to be reminded in your
busy.
Calendar to get writing.
Yeah.
Okay, but
some people have so many events that they have to do that.
Okay.
Right?
Well, I feel bad for those people.
Yeah.
And everyone, I understand that everyone's different. I'm just saying, in my particular case, I find myself increasingly. I haven't done it yet, but I've really seriously considered just turn off notifications. I don't
yeah.
care anymore.
Yeah.
I just don't care.
Completely. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, a lot of productivity experts say that's the way to get things done.
I know.
That and disabling.
Are we all a little frazzled now these days? I mean,
yeah.
No, but seriously, are we? Like, I feel like the constant noise coming in from every direction is problematic. I'm not a psychologist.
In our Discord, B. Jones says that's one of my problems with Teams. I turn it off and then it gets an update and then it's back on. So you're
right.
That's that is annoying. It should be stickier than that. I agree.
You know what that's like? Yeah. Focused Inbox, because I have to bring that up every episode now, just so I can rant about Focused Inbox.
I've been traumatized by this thing.
This is actually a problem with all computer solutions, hardware, and, you know, is that they don't honor you.
Right.
They don't. Right. And I think increasingly what's happened is companies are doing what's best for them, not for the user.
Yes.
And so it's better for
that
them.
Is so delightfully obvious and yet so it insightful. Is. It's like.
It is delightfully obvious.
It's sad that you have to remind people of that, but you're right. You are absolutely right. Yeah.
Well,
and that's actually, it's important to remember intent. You know, even it doesn't matter if it's like a focused inbox, like Mary Jo hates, or this dynamic island thing, whatever happens to it in the future, or notifications in general. I think it's really important. I always talk about this, you know, understand the relationship you have with technology or the company that made it or whatever it is. And this is a great part. This is really a part of that. You have to think of the intent.
Yeah.
What was the why on
why
earth
would they do that? Because they certainly
did they do this.
They
thing,
certainly could do. They could say, mm-hmm. Oh, you turned off Teams. Clearly you don't want to see Teams. We won't ever turn it on again. But no, they're proactively every update turning it back on.
He turned off Teams. Let's send him a message in Word. He'll never suspect that. Is there a way to turn that off? No, there isn't. It's hilarious. Yeah. No, it's, yeah.
That's, yeah.
I don't know. I'm just, I need to focus for my job. I have to write. And so if it's people I work with, you know, Paul, or not even Paul, it's just a small team of people and they've got something else going on, but I'm in that group. So I'm getting those notifications and they don't have anything to do with me at all, but they're still interrupting me all day. I mean, I think the cumulative effect of that over the course of days, weeks, years, you know, whatever, is very negative.
this came up because of Dynamic Island, because that's really what it is. It's another one of those things that's like this.
Yeah.
And I compared it, and I the more I think about this, I think the more accurate this is. People who use Mac OS will remember when the first version came out, when an application issued a notification, its dock icon would bounce and it would never stop. You had to manually go to it and look at it before it would stop. There was no way to turn that off. Now, obviously, people complained and then they fixed it. But in the beginning, that thing would do this. And to me, that is the ultimate example of an interruption. You're focusing on whatever it is you're writing, in my case, or reading or whatever it is. And this other thing is like, Hello. It's like that scene with Stewie and his mother and the Family Guy. You know, mom. You know, and it goes on for 7 minutes because it's the Family
Guy. I'm curious. Have you tried in Windows 11 the thing that was called, well, it's had all different names, Quiet Hours or Focus.
Yeah,
Focus.
Right. Something. Do Not Disturb and Focus. Yeah.
Does that work for you or not?
I turn it on and leave it on.
Right. So, interestingly, one of the weird things about Windows 11 and probably the most recent version of Windows 10 is that mode is on by default when you install or, you know, come up in Windows 11 for the first time. One of the things I was sort of, I don't want to call it researching, but I was curious, how long would this thing stay on? Forever. It literally stays that way until you turn it off. Yeah, it never goes off. So, okay, that shows a little bit of foresight on someone's part. So yeah, I guess you could argue that the person who turns it off is to blame or whatever. But I feel like, well, you know, it's the thing Mary Jo said. You do want some of them, right? So for example, if I turned off all of the notifications on my phone, wouldn't I still want a notification when one of my children or my wife or one of my best friends or whomever texted me or called me, right? Or you say something like you can configure a phone like we have quiet hours between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. But if it's my wife, put that through because that's obviously she's not going to call at 1 o'clock in the morning.
That's what phones do, right?
Yeah. I mean, this is what makes it hard. And so when I say like I've thought about just turning them off globally, but haven't. That's why, because really what you want to do is turn off notifications in a smart manner, and it's just not very easy.
No, it's not.
And then you'll install something, you know, whatever it is. You might need a utility for some reason.
It requires constant attention is what you're saying.
Yes. You don't you're babysitting it. And it's instead of technology that's helping you, it's technology that needs to be managed continually. And I already have a career, you know, like I don't want to spend all of my life managing this, but I think we do and we just accept it.
So I was looking at the rundown wondering, where's Paul's rant going to be today? And well, it started the show.
You threw it right in my lap. It's just a pet peeve of mine.
Get it out of the way.
So the question is, is this what Microsoft thinks people want based on its research? Or are they acting contrary to what they know their users want because it's in their business interest? And if it's the latter, I think that's bad. I think that's reprehensible.
You know what I think it is? Because I've thought about this with Focus on Box a lot. I think they periodically reintroduce this because they think, okay, you shut it off, but you know what? We've made it better. Or maybe you would like to try it now, right? Yeah. And like, I feel like they're like, give it another chance,
that.
Right?
Mommy,
I feel like that's what
it is. That's because creators love their creation. And so that wouldn't be nefarious. That would just be misunderstanding.
And I know you'll be surprised I took that direction.
Very surprised.
Microsoft obviously wants Windows 11 in particular. This is Windows 10 too, but let's just say Windows 11 to be more like a mobile operating system, you know, simpler and that kind of thing. And this Do Not Disturb stuff is really big on phones, you know. So obviously we have, you know, where are they looking for inspiration for ideas? And look, logically, you can say people work on computers. They need to focus. That's where the name of that thing came from. Let's add on to this mode, this Do Not Disturb mode, and do something.
Well, I think that's what they would say they did. I mean, they gave you Do Not Disturb. I mean, what do you
My
want?
My argument is if I sit down in front of the computer, this is the thing. This is a very personal. I understand this is just me. But I use the computer to work. So when I sit down in front of the computer, I'm working. When I step away from the computer, I'm doing other things. So to me, I'm always focused. To me, the computer is about focus. So all this other stuff is just noise. And I wish my phone had some understanding that I was using a computer and it would turn off its stuff. Like, I shouldn't have to, that's what I mean. I have to manage it. Like, I have to go to my phone and be like, all right, how do I tell my phone I'm in focus? I literally have no idea. I think there's a lock screen now for this for some reason. I don't know. You know, it becomes so top heavy, and I don't look. I'm a fairly technical person. I don't completely understand it.
Yeah.
How would I expect my wife, who's very smart but doesn't care about technology, or my mother, or my brother, or any normal person you care to mention? How would they do this?
It's death by a thousand paper cuts. And really, that is the normal user's experience of technology. Is there are many, many. In fact, I talk about this on the radio show. There are many minor annoyances that add up to making you, without even maybe knowing it, unsettled and disliking your experience.
Yeah.
And
that's
why I tell people on the radio show, if you hit an annoyance, fix it right then to avoid this death by a thousand paper cut syndrome. Because otherwise, and we all know what that is. I'm trying to think, you know, of course, there is an operating system that doesn't have commercial goals. That's Linux. And the same thing does happen, not nearly as much, but does happen in Linux, because a designer says, well, this is probably what you would want. And then,
but that's not really the issue with Linux.
People then stand up and say, no, that's not what we want. And usually it's turned off. So.
Yeah. I think for most people, though, Linux would have other issues that would kind of present themselves before that, right? Like it's...
I think that's an old-fashioned perception, to be honest. Okay. I'm not here to proselytize for Linux, and I don't want to do that, but... I do think people have this perception of, this is a geeky, finicky, hard to use operating system.
No, I don't mean it like that. I think people are kind of stuck in their ways with whatever apps they use. And if you're using mostly web-based apps and stuff like that, obviously anything would work, and Linux would be a good choice.
And that's one of the reasons why it's kind of growing in popularity, because most people aren't using desktop apps anymore. They're using online apps.
I mean, the top, you know, 8 or whatever apps on Windows, I bet, are all native apps. I mean, one of them is a web browser, for sure.
Yeah, in business. But, I mean, users, they do almost everything, including their email in a browser. Otherwise, you wouldn't
they should
have
be.
Chromebooks.
God, I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
I don't know. I don't know.
There's no perfect solution.
I think we shouldn't really care about operating systems, honestly. And I think that we're heading to that.
Well, Leo, as the co-host of Ashoka Windows Weekly, I could not...
We're
definitely heading to that future.
And I think
you know how many years we've said that though.
It's the year of the Linux desktop. 15, every year.
The idea, like, no one's going to care about operating systems anymore.
On the desktop, for example, if you do use the web, right? If you're using a Chrome, Edge, Brave, whatever, that type of browser, the experience is probably so similar day to day, just with regards to the quality and look and feel of the apps you're using, that moving between operating systems is probably not that big of a deal. The problem on mobile is, like, you can say, well, people shouldn't care about operating systems, but what they care about are the apps they use. And if you go between Android and iOS or whatever, and there's some material difference in the apps that you use the most, and there are, in my case, for example, I find myself liking this one better for this and this one better for that. And there are these kind of differences that do make one better, you know, subjectively than the other. And I think it just has to do with the immaturity of it. It's they haven't been around as long, maybe. You know, on Windows, Mac, and Linux, right? These things have been around for decades. Maybe they've just had more of a chance to mature.
I think there is a risk here, and it's a risk that we already know about. It happened with advertising on the web, where advertisers grew so rapacious that people just started blocking them. And I think there's the risk that if people start to perceive operating system companies, Microsoft particularly, as doing what's in their interest as opposed to what's in my interest as a user, there's going to be some kind of a revolt, unless people just put up with it and it's death by a thousand paper cuts. That might even be worse. People say, oh, I hate using computers. I hate them. I hate them.
I don't remember when this... No, yes, I do. In 2001, Microsoft added product activation to Windows XP, right? That was a major kind of initiative on their part to prevent piracy, right? That was the point of it. Before that, this notion of EULAs and you're signing an agreement, and if you actually looked at it, you would see you gave away all your rights. You don't own this thing. It's not yours. It meant nothing. But once that happened, you get into a weird area. Microsoft, now you've agreed to a EULA. You know, Microsoft could stop sending you updates tomorrow because you violated some term of a EULA you never even read.
Yeah.
You know? So ads are just the latest in a long line of awfulness from the platform makers. You know, it's just... One thing, really, in a long, long list.
What do we do? What do we do?
Suck it up. And we do. Well, what we can do, the three of us, is try to help people overcome the most terrible stuff, right? I mean, we can at least try to educate people what we can do. But, you know, I think the frustrating stuff is we still run into these problems.
Like can somebody write a program? You know, we talked about that program that a couple of weeks ago that goes through all your privacy settings and sets them all. And even on that program, they say, and by the way, every time you update Windows, you're going to rerun this program.
Yep.
And
which is
do
the
it
most
all.
Awful thing about Windows. Actually, the sly nature of that is so terrible. This is one of those things. It's not worth compiling a list, but there's a list to be made of what goes back to default when you install a new version of Windows, which, by the way, will happen sometime in the coming weeks. When Windows 11 version 22H2 occurs, you will be upgrading to a new version of Windows, even though Microsoft won't talk about it like that. And some of the defaults that you had changed in the interim will go back to what Microsoft wants them to be. Right. Sometimes they'll be obvious, you'll notice it, and sometimes they'll just be silent in the back, you know, like those privacy settings. Well, no, that's not great. You know, that doesn't actually make a lot of sense, but that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yep. I don't know how we got on this topic.
No, it's a great topic, especially today because we don't have very much to talk about. Well, we will, by the way, be taking your questions.
Well, not if we spent an hour on this thing.
Head over if you're. It's Club Twit only. Although we can take written questions from the IRC, so I will read your question in the IRC. But if you're in Club Twit, we actually can see and hear you. Head over, not yet, but to the open mic channel you'll see under the live window. And once you get over there, I guess we'll figure out a way to call on you. But it's over here on the left, the open mic channel on the show. That'll be coming up in about half an hour, hour and a half, 3 hours. Depends on how much more ranting there is. But we will let you know. And get
line me up like a little toy.
Prepare your questions.
You want to talk about spam on your phone? You want to talk about the little pixel that's in every email that lets them track you? Or the fact that I get like 120 different reach outs from fake PR firms every day via email?
You're busy, but if you guys ever wanted to come on my radio show and just do it, just do 10 minutes, you would hear what real people are asking. And it would be fun. We could do that. Mm. We could do that anytime you want. Just let me know. It would add to your national fame.
My national thing.
Can add one bit. Let's talk Windows 11. There was a build, 2-5-1-9-7.
We have literally four builds to talk about since the last we recorded this show somehow. There have been two builds.
Happen? Is this H2? Is this 22H2? Or
this is post-22H2. Yeah, so all of them, actually, right? So two builds to the dev channel. One was last Friday. One was today. And then two builds to the beta channel, which was earlier this week, kind of off schedule, frankly. But they're doing alternate build. So it's the same. It's the same basic build, but one has the new features and one doesn't have the new features. So I don't even care anymore to explain what that means. But they're
Paul, you have to care. Just fake it till you make it, dude.
It's.
It's hard to explain this in a rational way that isn't making it even more confusing.
I'll tell you what. I'll do the dev part of it. And Mary Jo, if you would like, you can do the beta.
Oh, excellent.
Stuff.
Fair. Yeah, split it.
That way you don't have to think about the splitting of the builds. Okay. So the build last week was basically about bringing back the tablet optimized taskbar that Microsoft had tested for 22H2, but cut. It wasn't going to make it in time. This is a good idea because this...
Do they call it the tot?
They should.
Is it a tiny tot?
Well, remember that with Windows 8, there was a... No, with Windows 10, there's an explicit tablet mode.
Yes,
you could
right.
push your PC into tablet mode if you wanted to, even if it wasn't a tablet
and,
or whatever.
And something like the Surface Studio, you would, if you detach the screen, it'd go, oh,
that's right.
I know what's going on.
It would happen automatically.
You're right? In tablet
so that
mode.
That was continuity would occur... would put it into tablet mode if that's how you configured the system, because you could determine how that worked. And that was a pretty good idea. But I think the notion, I don't like the idea of taking away manual tablet mode, but that continuity bit was a good idea. And so with Windows 11, they've taken away manual tablet mode. But essentially speaking, if you detach a keyboard, like you said on a Surface Pro.
What if I tap it with a pen or I touch the screen? Would that do it?
No. It's really about the keyboard. The idea and the reason you go into a mode, even though
iPad, if you have an Apple keyboard or any keyboard and you attach it to the smart connector, it goes, oh, okay, it won't show its keyboard. You know, it's
that's
soft.
Right. That's the point. Yeah, yeah. We're not going to cover up part of the screen. Although, you know, Windows, I mean, technically you could put the on-screen keyboard there if you wanted. But
yeah, there's a switch to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say in Windows 11 today, the notion, like what happens when you detach a keyboard is almost non-existent, frankly. And now what they're doing is, what they were always planning to do and now are going to do again, apparently, is have a taskbar that customizes itself based on whether or not you're in tab. Again, they sort of don't call it tablet mode. In fact, in one place, Microsoft literally has said, we got rid of tablet mode. But it actually, if you use this feature, it calls it tablet mode. So I'm going to call it tablet mode. But it is a tablet-optimized taskbar that will appear when you're in what I will call tablet mode, which is a computer that has a detachable keyboard where you have literally detached the keyboard.
The Verge, which unaccountably has followed the trend at ZDNet and CNET, and redesigned itself in some horrific way. It looks like it's broken.
Right.
But so I won't pay any attention to that header, but I will. It just, it's so
well,
much.
Well, that header. Yeah. Yeah.
What? That's so cray-cray.
It's nice because it's like half the pixels you need to read the word.
Everybody's doing this now with this kind of breadcrumby thing. They stole this from ZDNet. Anyway, they say Microsoft was all right. Look, they even have your slash, Mary Jo. I would sue them.
They're probably just using the same WordPress theme.
Oh, that's
probably.
It. Yeah. By the way, Matt Mullen, I got some announcements before we get to The Verge. Matt Mullenweg, who created WordPress and is now the CEO of Automattic, will be on Twig next show.
Oh, good.
Later today.
Nice.
And you'll be very interested to know. Oh, was it over now?
What?
I think Miguel de Acasa was on Floss Weekly. Was that this morning?
Nice. Oh, was he really?
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Was that this morning or was that next Tuesday or Wednesday? I don't know. That's, you know, you're going to have to watch the show.
Okay.
I'm curious.
Yeah.
I'm curious.
He's been very cagey about this.
He left Microsoft. We knew that.
He's going to go back and work on that, I almost called it Crow, that GNOME file manager application again, right?
Yeah.
He loves Apple. This guy loves Apple.
You think he's going to Apple?
I don't think he's going to go to Apple, but I could see him doing something like an Apple-related startup.
Miguel became famous in the open source world because
he probably loves open source more than he loves Apple.
He created a .NET clone for Linux, which became Xamarin. And Microsoft wisely, I think, hired him. And he did a lot of good stuff
at
Microsoft.
They bought him.
Yeah.
Here's an alternate history. I would say that Miguel de Casa single-handedly saved .NET.
They were going to
kick it out of .NET out of Windows 8. There was some basic, they just pulled it forward. They didn't do anything with it, but they stopped doing .NET best APIs for developers starting with Windows 8. And because he had done the work to bring .NET to mobile, .NET lived on, and now .NET is a cross-platform open source framework.
Yeah.
again, he wasn't like he didn't do all the work. I don't mean like that. There were hundreds, I'm sure, of people at Microsoft who made this happen. But it couldn't have happened without what he did. And I think that's incredible. Sure. But on the other hand, this cross-platform developer framework they have now, which is called MAUI, which used to be Xamarin's Forms, is a pile of crap. it's really bad. And I think they've spent the past several years trying to get it better for MAUI, right? And MAUI is definitely an improvement, but it has a long way to go. And unfortunately, that stuff isn't great. I'll just leave it at that. Maybe it gets great over time. But I feel like he kind of came and went now for Microsoft. He had an incredible, long-lasting, and historic contribution, I think is amazing.
Yeah.
I'm really curious.
Stoked when they said we were going to have him on. That's just so cool. Yeah.
I mean, they had tried to hire him for almost a decade before he eventually, went there. But I'm super curious to see what he does next.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So not a lot of people could say, you know. I was legendary in open source. I was legendary in Microsoft. Now what's next? Apparently,
well, I told you
in the
I told
show.
You
I didn't him, see the right? show yet. I'll see it when they put it out. But he did say in the show he's not crazy about Apple's App Store vetting process. So he might love Apple.
Right. The non-transparent.
He's not alone in that regard. That's for sure. Anyway, the point of The Verge was getting. God, mm-hmm. this has become a very discursive episode. I apologize. Let's pop the stack and go back to what we were talking about, which is detachable keyboards and the TOT.
Oh, yeah. Let me completely disagree with this assertion, by the way.
The Verge says Microsoft was right all along. More companies are embracing the form factor mm-hmm. that the Surface Pro is famous for, i.e., the detachable keyboard.
Except they aren't. That's absolutely not true.
Dell just announced one, didn't they?
Oh, no, it doesn't matter that they exist. What I'm saying is if you look at PC sales, you don't see these things out in the world. These are not even double digit. Yeah. And by the way, I know someone's going to say, well, what about the iPad? Yeah, the iPad can do this. But how many iPads actually do this? Like if you have an iPad, how many people are actually using it like this? It's a very small number. There's nothing wrong with this kind of convertible functionality, I guess. But this is not mainstream. And I would, you know, it wasn't exactly Surface Pro, but if you go back to the original tablet PC from 2002, I don't think we can call this a success, right? I mean, this has not done well overall.
You know what else is not a success? The Verge's redesign. This is horrible.
Oh, it's in dark mode.
You know what
it
looks like? It looks like Wired, back when Wired was doing those crazy issues that were super hard to
read. And then now on the right, they have this is a story stream feed. So it's like Twitter for Verge stories.
This is what I was just talking about. I came here to read this story and you're distracting me with this other stuff. What? Why would you do that?
Oh my God.
Yes.
So Mary Jo, you might have some insight. I mean, first it was CNET. ZDNet and CNET are owned by the same Red Ventures company.
Right.
So I thought, well, that makes sense. And I, as I said, I really like the ZDNet redesign. This looks like somebody saw it and then they made them blindfolded and then they tried to do it on The Verge.
I don't know what's going on there. When I looked at it, I'm like, ooh, ow.
But why is everybody redesigning?
The black background, I'm like, ugh.
But if this is the new style, I'm going to look so dated, I'm going to have to redesign as well.
No, you know, people redesign because they get bored, right?
They get bored, and they figure users are bored.
Let's do it.
Chat room says, The Verge has completely given up on life. Wow. All right. Yeah. So, TOT, the tablet-oriented...
Oh, right. Sorry. We only got through two. So this was in the build from last Friday.
Sorry.
That's okay. That was kind of the big feature that is coming back, apparently. And we don't know when, but in the future. Yep.
And why is my question, right? Like, why? I know, like, there are people out there who want Windows to get more touch friendly. Mm-hmm. But does it mean there's like a new class of PCs or tablets or something coming that we don't know about? Because right now, even if you have a 2-in-1, you know, where you can remove the keyboard, nobody removes it, right? Like people are like, yeah, I do when I watch a movie or something. Okay. But like, it's not like everybody takes the keyboard off, right? And I'm like, why are they making it more touch friendly? Like, is there a new group of things coming that need this?
You will remember this because I know you enjoyed this quite a bit, but back when we had the conversation around laptops and touchscreens. And I said, I finally have come around to your way of thinking on that. You know, this caused me to reevaluate a lot of things.
Your whole life.
And one
life,
of the things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And it's always a sobering experience. But one of the things I was thinking about with regards to laptops and reviewing hardware and all that stuff is the topic we're actually talking about right now. This is actually the background of why I just said what I said, which is PC makers, you know, they try to differentiate their products from each other, and obviously from Apple and from Chromebook, whatever. And it's astonishing how many convertible laptops I get in for review. Mm-hmm. And it's compared to how often I actually use it in that in some non-laptop form factor, which is like literally 0.something%. Like it's almost completely zero. I know there are exceptions. I'm not talking about people who are artists or note takers. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there are times when that kind of thing is fine. But the truth is, these things are so compromised for most of these use cases. So, for example, like a 13 to 16-inch convertible laptop where you flip the screen around and you turn it into a giant, thick, heavy tablet, has a stylus you can pop out of a garage. So it sits there, it's charged all the time and everything. You never have to worry about losing it because it's in that little garage thing. But it's the size of a toothpick. And so you're writing on this thing that's the size of an S Pen or smaller on some giant screen, and you're telling me that some artist or some student or knowledge worker is going to take notes using this little stupid thing? I don't think so. And I'm not going to like take points off of a review because the device is a convertible, but I seriously have my doubts about the thinking at PC makers who keep going along with this thing. Because, people might be buying them, but do you have any notion of what they're actually doing with them? I can't guarantee this, but I semi-guarantee high 90% never use it for anything other than a laptop.
Right. Full stop. Remember when Microsoft first came out with the Surface Book and everybody's like, oh, that's going to be so cool. Like, you can take this bottom part off. And I'm like, why would you, though? Like, show me why. And they stopped doing it because nobody was doing it. Right. And so we're back to touch again. And I'm like, okay, you can you can have Windows 11 and Windows 10 tablets, but
listen, for Mary Jo, when Mary Jo's gone, she'll be remembered for many things. But I think her number one legacy is going to be the term lappability. And this is just a common sense approach to someone has shown me a product. And everyone around me is going, oh my God, that's amazing. Right. And she's like, yeah, but can you put it on your lap? She's the only one who asked this question. And then she put it on her lap and it fell off. And everyone else is like, oh my God, you can take off the screen.
People said, it's because your legs are too short.
Oh, it's no, it's your fault. It's you. Blah, blah, blah. It's your fault.
You're lapping it wrong.
It's not me.
It's your fault.
No, so I experienced the same issue. I'm 6 foot one. I can't use this thing on my knees either. So it's not height. It's not her knees or her legs, whatever. It's just this is compromised for the number one use case for this device. You've made this thing that can do this thing. That, yes, it's okay. It's impressive. But the percentage of people that need that versus the percentage of people who need the thing you pointed out immediately, very small. Doesn't mean it shouldn't exist. But it does mean this doesn't replace the laptop. That's what it means. It could establish itself as some kind of a niche part of the overall business, but that's all it is. And, you know, when you, again, for the iPad, I know because the iPad guys are, hold on, we can do it too. Yeah, you can. But 90-something percent of the people who use iPads use it as a tablet, and that's it. Period. You know that's true.
Yeah.
It's obviously true. It doesn't mean it shouldn't do the thing.
No, you hit the nail on the head. PC makers want to differentiate, right? And so how do you differentiate? You come up with these weird things that can fold in three places and four places. You can turn it inside out, flip it around like the yoga. Like, okay, there are use cases for this. I'm not saying there are none. But if you just made a great laptop that could be used on your lap that had great battery life, you've got a winning product right there. But nobody wants to do that because it's boring, right?
The pandemic apparently showed Microsoft that computers still matter. Hilarious. But those computers they're just computers. They're laptops. They're just normal computers. I will say, you know, a week or two ago, I think it was last week, we talked about the Lenovo Fold, the new version of 16. Yeah. That one is kind of interesting because It is a lappable 13.3-inch laptop, and it's normal, you know, curved form with the hardware keyboard on it. Or if you have the space, you could open it up, put it on a kickstand that's built in, I think, and detach the keyboard and use it over Bluetooth. And then now we have a new form factor, which, by the way, is very interesting. You know who didn't invent that form factor? Microsoft. The people who keep bragging about their ability to create new form factors. They did not invent that form factor. So they had this minor hit with the Surface Pro, which, by the way, they didn't invent either, but whatever. We can give them they formalized it. That's fine. But I don't. That is not the future of computers. I'm sorry.
Right.
It's not. Not the Surface Pro. It's not. How many years has that thing been around? This is the 10th anniversary of Surface Pro and the 20th anniversary of the tablet PC this year, right?
We talk about this a lot privately. Microsoft mm-hmm. loves to design products for itself a lot of times, like it, right. like a lot of, especially software and services. Like when you look at what they're building, I'm like, they're building it because they need it as a giant company. And, you know, this is a service they need. Probably a very small subset of their customers need it. But I feel like Surface Pro is kind of like that. I feel like it's a great device for people who are on the road, like salespeople or people who are executives who like they open their device and they need to type like, yeah, great idea, like a one line email. And then right. they close it and they don't reopen it for like another couple hours because they're in meetings and they're going around. For those people, I think that is an awesome device. But for people right. like us, like, or people,
well,
who
I'm
are
sorry,
students,
for people like for normal people, you know, for most people.
Yeah.
By the way, here let me ask. Just occurred to me as you were talking. What do you think the impetus was for this tablet optimized taskbar feature? Right. What on earth would possess right. Microsoft to even bother? So I have two okay. choices. You could
yeah. Give me your
make.
Theories.
And it could be both of them.
Yeah.
One is there's still this minority of people who still bitch and moan every time anything tablet comes up because Windows 8 was better than whatever's come since. There are people who are right. convinced of that. Microsoft has done everything. I actually think the side swipe stuff is better in Windows 11 than it's ever been. I don't know what they're talking yeah. about, but okay, fine. Yeah. Granted, I don't use the tablet form factor a lot. That's right. that's one. Just to shut okay. those people up. Like, we're going to keep trying to optimize this thing. But actually, this is what made me think of it, is what you just said. Microsoft did make Surface, right? So every time you see a Microsoft right. guy on screen, not every time, but most times, they're using a Surface device. I bet a lot of people from Microsoft use Surface PCs, right?
They do.
They probably yeah. do. So do you think there is some internal thing at Microsoft where people using these devices are weighing the feature set to their needs, which doesn't yeah. reflect the planet? You know, in other words, like a bunch of people at Microsoft, mm. you know, 100,000 people at Microsoft mm. are using Surface. And they're like, guys, we could have more tablet features. We use Surface devices. But out in the world, nobody uses Surface devices, right? So they're adding this feature and everyone else is like, what is this thing? I'm never even going to see this. What is the point right. of this?
I just don't like the bouncy keyboard.
Yeah, it's too bouncy. Yeah. It's too bouncy. And whenever you see pictures of them using the Surface, which always cracks me up, to prove you can use it on your lap, you always see them like on a couch, like laying in this right, weird right. position with their legs out in front of them, crossed yep. like at yeah. the
it's
ankle.
It's like a Shea lounge where they're back like 117 right? degrees.
Yeah. yeah, maybe. But I keep feeling like there's got to be another reason they're doing all this extra work to turn it into a tablet. And I think either they have another tablet coming, like a Surface branded tablet, mm-hmm. Maybe a dual screen tablet, maybe something like that.
Right.
Or OEMs are telling them, we need you to optimize this for touch because foldables are getting more important or this or that. Like, there's a reason they're doing this. And I want to know the reason. I'm curious.
So Bill Belichick can throw it like a frisbee.
Exactly. Right. There's a real reason. See, that's the actual reason.
There's a man who has a healthy relationship with technology. You know?
Hey, I need to take a break. So let's do that.
I just to be clear, we have gotten to the first bullet in
I know.
The first
You're not going to have any time. You're not going to have any time. You guys are cracking me up. You know what? You got to have the confidence in your ability to BS for any amount of time. You're showing a lack of confidence, when you say, we have to take questions.
If you had said to me, we need to BS for an hour, I would not be able to do it. But all you really did was line me up with some controversial topic.
Line you up, baby.
I think the questions are really fun. Like, we
no, we'll do it.
Get
we'll
some
do
really
it.
Good ones.
We'll do it.
We do.
Because we love our audience. Unlike Microsoft, we care about our users. No, we care, and I'm sure Microsoft does too, right? Our show today brought to you by InfraScale. I want you to get the name right on this one because this is something you're going to want to use, especially as the statistics for ransomware start going up and up and up. It's just, it's very disturbing. According to betanews.com, cyber criminals can penetrate up to 93% of all companies' networks. Not just big business either. Not 46% of SMBs have already been a victim of ransomware attacks. Almost half. This is why you need the right backup. I always say this when I hear about these attacks. What, they didn't have a backup? They did. They didn't have the right one. They didn't have the InfraScale cloud backup. And I'll tell you why. This gives you the security you need to protect yourself from hackers, adverse events of all kinds, you know, physical failure, acts of God. You'll sleep easier at night knowing your company will never have to pay a ransom. You can backup and protect everything, too, with InfraScale. You can backup SaaS applications, of course, endpoints, servers. You can execute disaster recovery on site if, you know, everything's okay, you just want to restore, or if it's not, in the cloud. Every company needs a secure endpoint data protection program, a solution that's easy to install and manage. InfraScale offers this by integrating with Hyper-V and VMware. Yeah, it'll actually back up your virtual machines. And it even enables site-to-site failover with orchestration in the InfraScale cloud. So, you know, if Detroit's down, you can bring Denver up. The key, though, and this is a word you got to remember when it comes to ransomware, to keep hackers away, you need immutability. Immutability is at the core of how the product is designed. Your data is encrypted, even in storage, and no one can touch it. No one can touch it. If you don't have the key, forget about it. With InfraScale backup and disaster recovery, you'll be ready for whatever comes your way. Whether it's a server crash, a human error, malicious activity, natural disaster. According to Gartner, the average, this is the scary stat, the average cost of downtime caused by any incident, a local or a site-wide incident across all industry sectors, $5,600 a minute. A minute. About $330,000 an hour. $330,000 an hour. That's the average cost. So it's important you get up and running fast, right? That's why InfraScale backup and disaster recovery is so good. Clients and partners alike, MSPs, VARs, trust InfraScale backup and recovery solutions to help their business stay running, eliminate downtime, eliminate data loss. It's the most cost-effective enterprise-grade data protection solution. More than 65,000 companies use InfraScale. Your company should. That way, if disaster strikes, your applications, data, your systems are recovered and available in record time. Because remember, $330,000 for every hour of downtime. That's a lot of money. Their award-winning world-class support is there, of course, to ensure your business is protected 24/7. And now it includes SSD at no extra charge, so backup and recovery fast. Whatever your data, whatever your environment, InfraScale provides continuity and resiliency for your business. Visit infrascale.com/twit, I-N-F-R-A, infrascale.com/twit. Sign up for a free demo. Find out more. See how InfraScale protects your business today. It is the solution. Don't waste a minute, though, because remember, every minute's $5,600. Infrascale.com/twit. We thank them so much for supporting Windows Weekly. You support Windows Weekly when you use that special address. Remember now. That way they know you saw it here. Infrascale.com/twit. Okay, bullet point two. Is Mary Jo going to take this one, this build?
No, this is the second half of my...
We're still on the first build. Okay,
I'll make this one...
No hurry.
I'll make this one quick. So just today we got, meaning the dev channel, got build 25201. The marquee feature here is something that they're calling expanded view for widgets, which is basically the full screen view that Microsoft showed off last June when they first talked about Windows 11 or July or whenever that was. So it's not quite full screen, but it basically takes, you know, so instead of that little, you know, pane, you, it basically fills up most of the desktop. And if you use it in expanded view, it will stay that way. So every time you launch widgets, it will go into that view or not, depending on how you configure it. And then you can also get an ISO of this build for some reason, if this type of thing is meaningful to you. And that's about it. Oh, and then I'll just real quick. This was not in a new build, but if you're in the dev channel, the calculator app has been made ARM64 native if you're using Windows and ARM, which you aren't. And the media player app has a shortcut in it, as does the Photos app, by the way, if you've not seen it, so that when you're watching a video, that's assuming it's not a, well, it wouldn't be. If you're watching a video on media player, you can click a link in there now and edit that video using Clipchamp. Everyone's favorite new video editor.
You like Clipchamp, right?
I do. It's a good app.
Yeah, it's cool, actually. I just make fun of the name. Yeah.
It's a stupid name, but it's a good app.
It is. Yeah.
Good.
And then beta, the beta channel. This is the hard one to explain. That's why Paul gave this one to
me.
That's
exactly right.
So in the beta channel, testers are getting one of two builds every time a beta release comes out. And they're separated by one number. So this past week, there was 22621 and 22622. So they are identical in terms of what's in there for features, but in one of those two, the features are off, and one of them, they're on by default. And the reason Microsoft's doing this is to for them to test, is it possible for us to send these releases out with features off or features on, which kind of tips their hand and going into the future, saying at some point they're going to start delivering Windows this way, right? With features turned off, features turned on, and people will have the option to switch back and forth, or IT pros will be able to like set group policies to turn features off and on. So in the build that came out last week, there were a couple small-ish changes, although maybe Paul will think this is bigger than I do.
Okay.
I think it's a temporary change, though. Testers no longer able to uninstall apps with interdependencies like games installed via Steam.
Right.
I think that's temporary, though, the way they were describing it.
I couldn't tell the way they said, because there were two things tied. There's also won't be possible to repair Win32 apps in the settings app.
A temporary restriction. So maybe it's just that one that's temporary. And then both of them have a set of fixes that go along with them. I don't know. I've kind of stopped paying attention to the beta channel, I have to admit, because I feel like it's almost all fixes. There's this confusing features off, features on thing. And I feel, I feel like we're kind of losing the plot in Windows Insiders anymore, because I'm like, okay, we get the beta channel. They're testing things that may never go into the product, or they may. We don't know. Beta channel also may go into the product, may not, but they're testing in this parallel way with two sets of things going out every time. Release preview channel, that's the safe one. If you want to test something that's going to go into the product, the next version of the product, that's where you go if you care about having the set of features that you're testing match what's going to show up in the product. But I feel like it's just gotten so complicated. Then there are like the apps are on their own testing path, and it's just, I feel like I used to really understand the insider program and it was very clear cut, and now I do not. So.
Yep. No, 100%. Yeah. The insider program is like what happened to Windows 10, which was the idea was good in the beginning. And they said this will be nice because it will really simplify things. There will be one version of Windows that most people are on. But then they released two versions of Windows 10 every year, and then eventually one. But and there are more supported versions of Windows out in the world now than there ever been ever in history.
There are more.
And then if you look at the Insider program,
that's an interesting statistic. Really?
Yeah.
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 No, because if you think about what's being supported, like when you see Patch Tuesday come out, you're like, look at all these versions they're patching. Like Windows 7 is still being patched.
Unprecedented? Right? Really? That's cool, actually.
Yeah. Well, I mean, think back.
It's
so
kind of frightening.
the myth about Windows is that a new version comes out every three. It used to come out every 3 years, right? So that happened during one time period. But let's say that somehow magically is the case. I mean, in the 10 years of active support for any version of Windows, there could be three versions of Windows. And then I guess for 1 year, maybe four, depending on how that works out schedule-wise. But there are many more versions of Windows supported today. And it's when you consider enterprise, education, home pro, Windows 10, Windows 11. You know, it gets very complicated. Now they've done work to try to simplify it, but they've also done work on the flip side in the Insider program to really make this complex. So not only do we have the three channels, none of which map to a version of Windows anymore, which is like whatever.
Release preview, now, I guess, does, right?
Okay, maybe. Maybe, but some of them, at least one of them, I think release preview, you could be on Windows 10 or 11. At least one of them, the beta channel, there are two separate paths with features turned on, features turned off. It's gotten very complex. It used to be that we're testing this version of Windows, we're testing the next version of Windows. You're like, yeah, that makes sense. Yep. And I think they had so many defeats getting promised features into the product that they really maybe overthought it. It's complex.
And in the Discord right now, we're having a big discussion about the Britishism called faff, when you're like faffing around. So I feel like the Windows Insider program feels like Microsoft's kind of faffing around with what's going on. Just to use it in context.
I think it sounds dirty. I'm not sure we should. I don't know. We're gonna have
to. It means unnecessarily complex. Like if if you say that, it's just like, what is this person doing? You know,
this is like the Mensa episode of The Simpsons. We left this person in charge, and they have no idea what they're doing.
Faffing around. I like that.
Yeah, to make I have a few British friends who use it. Yeah, for a couple of British friends of mine use that, and I'm like, I got to work that into a story because it's such a good term.
An overcomplicated task, especially one perceived as a waste of time.
Yes. So it's a lot like
it's an apt term here, isn't it?
Or, according to the Cambridge Dictionary, to need a lot of effort or cause slight problems. Maybe need a lot of effort to cause slight problems. Stripping the walls was a real faff.
We're going to separate the chaff from the faff.
To dilly-dally.
Dilly-dally. Another good one.
To delay. Especially before leaving the house to be on time somewhere. Oh, that's how I use it. I can't decide between these two jackets to wear to the movies. Which one? Where is my black hat? Oh, wait, let me get my phone. Do you know where I put it? Oh, and did you feed the cat dinner?
Oh, God, this is like half of every British drama ever made.
Stop your faffing. We've got to leave right now.
Stop faffing around, Leo. Stop faffing around.
I live to faff. That's my life.
Faffing is my life by Leo Laporte.
I'm the faffinator. I like it. This is good. I'll
it's
be
a word.
Faff.
It's a word you need in your repertoire. You do. You need this word.
I'm the faffinator. All right. Are we done with the beta? Have we faffed sufficiently?
We faffed around on this enough. Yes,
all
we
right.
have.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. Get yourself to section 2. Surface. Well, we kind of did this one, really, but we can do it some more.
Well, I just want to throw this out as kind of a... Well, I don't want this to turn into 30 minutes, but...
Yes, please.
Google... The Verge recently reported that Google has killed their next Pixelbook, which is a Chromebook laptop. That was pretty far along in development. The team has been scattered to other parts of the company.
So sad.
Yeah. Now, as I'm a fan of Pixel, the brand, and the products, not just the phones, but the other Pixel-branded products. I think with the Pixelbook, the first one was, I think, was called the Chromebook Pixel. I think it was the first time to use the word Pixel in a brand. I think it was the first Pixel, if I remember correctly.
I got to test one of those. Did you get one of those?
Yeah.
Google gave it to me to test. Yeah.
Well, you're talking about the prototype one, the black little guy?
No, the first time they came out with a Pixel-based PC.
A Pixel. Oh. I didn't use the Chromebook Pixel, but I did briefly own a Pixelbook.
I think they saw me talking about how I use PCs and like, you're the perfect person to use.
You
this,
are.
They were correct.
I still think you would be very good. You could get a lot of use out of a Pixelbook.
But now they're getting rid of it maybe. So like, yeah. Well, and it makes me scared. It makes you scared about the phones, right? When you see them doing this with the PC.
Google's problem in a nutshell. Everybody's scared of using anything they make.
Yep.
Right. So, first of all, you have to think about why they did. This is what we talked about earlier. Like, what was the intent here? Right. And why are they doing this? And then how does this kind of impact things more broadly, right? So, the intent, the report says the intent is to save money. In other words, they looked objectively at what things were costing and said, this is not going to have a return. We need to get rid of this thing. That's a harsh bit of news for fans of Chromebooks mm-hmm. in general, I would say, but also specifically Pixelbooks. And then you think about the Google's wider strategy. They spent the past year telling you that big screen Android devices are going to be the next big thing. And if they did to Android what Apple did to the iPad, which was bring the desktop version of their web browser to it, wouldn't a Android-based laptop slash tablet, detachable, whatever, make a lot of sense? Maybe. Mm-hmm. That's kind of interesting. Yeah. But I was also, just because I'm kind of in this world, I was really interested to see how people were reacting to this, right? So meaning Google slash Chrome slash whatever websites and blogs. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people were saying exactly the same thing. This is fine. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
The Pixelbook came around at a time when Chromebooks were around, but they were cheap and plasticky and terrible. And they wanted to show that this could be a nice laptop. I think the first one was way too expensive, but whatever. They made, like, look, here's a luxury Chromebook. And they kind of established the notion that this could be a thing. Now, Chromebook hasn't taken the world by fire, but there are beautiful Chromebooks today, right? So mm-hmm. if you want a Chromebook, and you could go to HP or Dell or Lenovo, they'll sell you an $800 whatever, and they're beautiful. They have convertibles with pens and everything you would want. It's all there. Mm-hmm. It kind of made me think about Microsoft, though, with Surface, right? The PC industry did not have this problem. The PC industry had cheap PCs, expensive PCs, premium PCs, and gaming PCs. They had all these different options and everything. And then Microsoft, for some reason, entered the market and said, we're going to make a PC too. And it's weird because you can justify why Google did Pixelbook. I don't think you can justify why. I still, all these 10 years later, I have no idea why they did this. All they did was harm their relationships with their biggest partners.
Well, it's, you know, why they said they did it, right?
Well, okay.
They said they did it because PC makers weren't taking risks and trying new things, and they needed
to
kind of
give them a
little
push. Which is a great thing to say about
your
biggest partners.
Right. Like, we hate our partners. They're doing terrible designs, and they're really lazy. So let's get in the market and give them some competition. No, actually, at first, they got in the market to show them how it was done. Yeah. That was their intention.
Which failed miserably.
They wanted people to copy them, right? They wanted people to copy them. They're like, okay, make this, right?
So there was a little bit of learning on both sides, but more, I would say, on Microsoft's side, because one issue that PC makers had with Microsoft is they would go back to Microsoft with every release of Windows and say, hey, you have this problem. You need to fix it. And they're like, we're not seeing it. We don't really, this is not an issue. But then Microsoft made their own PCs and they were like, holy crap, we got this really bad problem. We need to solve this. And they also found out how hard it was to make hardware that's reliable and that actually works. They had all those power management issues, obviously, with Surface Pro 4 and the Surface Book, I think it was the first one. You know, it was a learning. They never should have went through this. The partnership that Microsoft has had and had with its PC makers was the right approach for this product line. And I think, you know, Chromebook maybe has matured to the point where Google has gotten there, and maybe this is okay. I feel bad about it because I like the Pixel brand or whatever, but I kind of get it. But I look at Microsoft, I'm like, I just don't see the justification. There's no Surface device that has taken the world by storm. The minor example is Surface Pro, because yes, the PC makers have copied that design. If you like that design, it's kind of inarguable that you can't get a better version of Surface Pro from another company, though.
Right? But Microsoft makes money on it.
I don't think they do.
We don't know if they make money on it.
I don't think they do.
I mean, I'm sure Google doesn't lose money on the Pixelbook. Well,
right.
Maybe
we
it
don't
does.
Know if they,
actually,
know if
I'm pretty sure they do.
Money.
Yeah. So if you sold 1,000 of them, but it cost you $5 million to market and design, then there's no point in doing it. And that's probably the case. Do you think Microsoft's in that upside down on Surface?
Yeah, I think they're somewhat upside down. Okay.
No, they're definitely upside down.
Do they get any other subsidiary benefit from it? Like, as a reference design or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, that's what they say.
Well, not a financial benefit.
No, not a financial benefit.
A spiritual benefit. You know, is it good for the brand or something?
Well, for Leo, I think, mentioned earlier, one of the things he doesn't like about the Surface Pro is the bouncy keyboard, right?
Yeah.
Lenovo or HP, I know, off the top of my head, makes a version of Surface Pro with a very stiff, actually Lenovo does too, keyboard that solves that problem. That's one of those things. Yeah. So if you want like a ThinkPad keyboard on a non-bouncy kind of a keyboard cover type of situation, Lenovo makes that for you. Mm-hmm. But that's the point. I mean, whatever they thought they were going to do to the PC industry, I think they've kind of made that point. I don't believe they did anything to raise the quality of premium PCs at all. I think those things were already happening. So that's insulting to HP and Dell. Yes.
There's kind of a precedent to say that they dropped Signature PC. They dropped the stores. There's a precedent for this. If it's not if it's not changing the world in the way they want, and you're losing money.
It would be embarrassing for this to fail. It was embarrassing. That's a good point. The Microsoft store, that had to have been. What a horrible PR hit.
Right.
And the gloating that must have occurred in Cupertino.
Because they were all across the street from Apple stores.
Yeah.
right. Well, you know.
No, but if they were really making decisions.
Karma is tough.
If they were really making decisions like we're talking about, like based on just sheer, like, are we making money? Are people buying it? They would have abandoned the Duo already, right? Like, that would be like in a landfill right somewhere, right?
Well, they have a vision.
Maybe they have. We don't know that they haven't.
Well, that's true.
Rumor is next year for Duo 3.
I would say with the Duo, they're saying, look, we have a vision for where the market's going, and we want to really, this is why, by the way, Google did a Pixelbook. We want to forward that vision
by making this
product so that others get it and go for it. But that job done, mission accomplished for the Pixelbook. Yeah. And you know what? Mission accomplished for the Surface.
This is like IBM has successfully completed its run of the PS1 or the PC Junior, remember?
Yeah.
You know, you try to phrase it like it's
mission
we did it. We did what we wanted.
We did it.
You know,
this was the goal and we got it.
I can't believe that's what they wanted.
No, when they first came out with the Surface, I kept getting tips from people who I'm convinced were probably OEMs in sheep's clothing, right? who were saying Microsoft's going to dump this. Like, there's no way this continues. I think they're going to get out of this market. I hear they're going to get out of Surface. And I kept saying, I'm not hearing that. And they haven't, right? And I think at this point, they're not going to. I think they're sticking with it at this point.
Okay.
I don't think they're getting out of Surface.
Well, Microsoft and Google have publicly made some of the same, you know, said some of the same things. Like, we're going to focus now. Yeah. We're going to, you know. And Google, I mean, one of the things people don't like about Google, which Leo said, was they seem to cancel things at the drop of a hat. But on the other hand, Sundar Pichai did say, we need to focus. And this, you see the inevitable outcome of that is products that, if you're a Stadia fan, for example, you got to be a little worried right now. Like, that's not been a huge success. It would be reasonable for Microsoft to take similar steps. I'm literally not saying they should can't kill Surface. I don't mean it like that, but I meant it more as kind of a mental exercise. Like, you look at what Google just did. You look at the rationale for this product in the first place. You can make a case for what Google did, but you look at what Microsoft did, and I still can't reconcile them ever doing this. Like, that they even made Surface to me makes no sense. That they have made some great products, by the way. There are Surface PCs that I still love and would be happy to use every day, you know, if they work properly. But they've made some great products. That's another fact. They're kind of unrelated. But do they sell well? Are they ever in the top 10 or 5 of any list of anything? I don't think they are.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It's just an open question. I don't mean it. I'm literally not arguing.
Undoubtedly a question being asked in the boardroom.
Oh, for sure.
They should be.
Yep.
Especially as your mission as the Microsoft board is, we want to be a cloud company, like all wood behind the cloud era, right? And then you're like, so why are we making PCs, right?
Like, it's like a low margin business. We're probably losing money on it. Yeah. We haven't exactly set the world on fire, whether you're talking about inspiring other hardware makers or just selling the damn thing. Why are we doing this? We're making all this money over here. Who cares what device they're using? You know,
I've been reading recently and with great interest, you know, Microsoft's VS Code strategy. You know, I as a hobbyist programmer, you are too, Paul.
Yep.
Very aware of Microsoft's free coding platform, not Visual Studio, but VS Code, the little boy that's all not, by the way, on Mac, PC and Linux and works great. And they have a cloud version of it. And developers are starting to come to the understanding that between GitHub and VS Code, Microsoft is making a strong play for kind of subscription coding. Like, they're putting in so many cloud features into VS Code, like pair programming and things, that more and more people will kind of move to this cloud platform, you know, for CI/CD and all of this. And Microsoft's sitting squarely there. This is a really good cloud strategy. And I think a lot of developers have been slowly, especially just open source developers, sucked
into use this. Ads if you don't pay.
Well, you
know, a little blinking ad in Visual Studio Code.
Yeah. You know. I'm seeing some really cool uses, though. I mean, you know, you might say, as probably I do, oh, I don't want to get into a proprietary system. And yet, it looks so good and works so good. And the interaction and the integration is so good that you go, wow.
The extensibility is amazing. I think that's one of the things that really sells it.
Yeah. And they've got this visualstudio.com now where you, you code in the cloud and
Microsoft's roots are in software development. I feel like they've always done a great job there.
Yeah, no kidding.
And if you do want to create native apps on whatever platform, you know, Visual Studio, the big brother, is still an amazing product.
And then they got DevBox coming, right? Which so
well, I don't know about that. I'm not going to get excited.
You know what's funny? So after the episode where you guys are kind of poo-pooing DevBox, I heard from so many people who are like, "Here's why I want DevBox." Like, and people had a lot of reasons. They said, "You guys are kind of poo-pooing setting up a dev workstation or how much it costs to have a certain kind of hardware." They're like, "Yeah, you're kind of downplaying that. That could be a real reason for people to use this."
It could be.
I'm just relaying the message since I, unlike you two, am not a programmer. But
I mean, I spend just more time configuring Visual Studio than I do compiling code. But yeah, no, I see what you're saying.
No, I think that's a great point.
They're well positioned. They're very
Microsoft. Microsoft wants everything to be a subscription. Like if that could be the future for them, they would be sitting perfectly, right? And that's why the hardware thing is kind of an outlier, right? Like what you could say, you know,
that's,
well, you could say their finance program for it, like, you know, where if a Surface dies, you can automatically get it replaced if you buy this certain subscription. Blah blah blah. You can kind of make that argument, but it's not the same as the rest of their business, for sure.
You're touching on something that I actually think is really interesting, because when you look at Microsoft throughout the years, a lot of people would have called Microsoft like a one-product company because of Windows back in the day. It was really kind of a three-product company. Eventually, it was Windows Server, Office was kind of the big three. And these were ecosystems that, you know, kind of built off of them. But the problem with those products is that they have life cycle. So you get these big booms and then you have periods of real bad downtime, especially with Office. I mean, people were not upgrading Office at all. And literally. And so the subscription thing, when you think about Microsoft moves to the cloud, it's kind of a higher margin business, all that kind of thing. But it's also the subscription thing leads you to a point of steady income, right? Because from Microsoft's perspective, predictable steady income is much better than spikes and valleys.
Right.
Especially when there are more valleys than there are spikes, you know. So a new Windows release, a new Office release, a new server release would generate a spike financially, which I'm sure was always, for a long time was a big deal. But what they want is that kind of steady line of income. And that's what the subscription does. You know, people obviously don't like it in some ways, although they make it advantageous. I think Microsoft has done a good job, for example, with Microsoft 365 or Office 365, where it becomes almost a no-brainer for the people that need that stuff, and it keeps getting better over time. So maybe they can do that with Visual Studio. You know, it's an interesting thing. Developers are the type of people who would recoil from that the most, I would say. But
that's the thing. It's a honeypot. You start using GitHub for free, you view VS Code for free, then you want a little bit more, you want a little bit more, and pretty soon you're leaving.
You get Azure
Microsoft
credits, and you get this and that, and
it's total honeypot.
And eventually you're giving Microsoft $85 a month, and you don't even know how it happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you look at this, and it's so cool, and there's so many things you can do, and you go, oh, I really want that. So there's an open source VS Code, you know, you can run that, but you won't get all the features unless you sign in with your Microsoft account and start downloading some of their extensions. And it's great.
I mean, Adobe Creative Cloud. Have you ever looked at the pricing on this thing? Like, it's something I think about, and then I look at it, and I'm like, oh, no, I can't. What is this? Crazy.
Right.
You know,
right.
For what I do.
It's not a honeypot, it's a money pot.
There you go.
Chat room.
All right. Yeah, actually, there was somebody put the blog post that I was thinking about from G. Huntley. Visual Studio Code is designed to fracture.
Fracture. Wow.
Fracture.
That's
Here, I'll give you the pull quote. Whilst Visual Studio is open.
I hope it's clear I'm not a Microsoft defender here, but I will say this. I questioned what Visual Studio Code was when they first announced it. And the way they described it to me was that Visual Studio, the big brother thing, attracts a certain part of the market.
Yeah.
But the world has gone in this different direction where it's a lot of it is web development and mobile app development. And Visual Studio isn't great for that. And it doesn't speak to people on other platforms. And they wanted a way. They saw things like Atom and...
By the way, GitHub's Atom gone. Mm-hmm. GitHub discontinued it.
Okay. Weird. Who wants GitHub again? Anyway, but the point is, but Atom had its issues.
No, it's clear what they want. They Eclipse, want everybody to use VS Code. And as you use VS Code, you are slowly, inevitably, inexorably channeled into the Microsoft cloud. Okay.
But this is Apple has made a great success out of doing this kind of thing.
Xcode. If
Microsoft
the same thing,
is well serving the developer community with this type of strategy and these products, I mean, we can't argue against it. We just, you know, if it's the right thing for those people, then this is what you should do.
No. I think I don't. It's a good strategy. It's a good business strategy. I think it's more people saying, "Oh wow!" Like the frog in the pot. I just woke up and it's kind of hot.
Yeah.
That's all. And you don't
and
have
you'll
to.
You'll see Steve Ballmer and he'll be like, see, I told you, Linux is a cancer. I wasn't joking.
You don't have to do it. Hey, I want to take another break. Don't forget, we are going to take live calls in our Discord and questions from our IRC in about 3 hours at this pace. We'll be there. And you will be so, so happy. Our show today, speaking of Lenovo, brought to you by Lenovo, orchestrated by the experts at CDW. The helpful people at CDW understand as the world changes, your organization needs to adapt quickly to be successful. So how can CDW keep your business ahead of the curve? With Lenovo ThinkPads, yes. These powerful devices deliver the business class performance you're looking for thanks to Windows 10 and the Intel Evo platform. With your remote teams working across the country and around the world, collaboration is not a problem because Lenovo ThinkPads keep your organization productive and connected from anywhere. Plus, of course, CDW knows your workforce has different work styles, needs flexibility, and that's why Lenovo ThinkPads are equipped with responsive tools and built-in features that let your team work seamlessly across their favorite tools. Now, think about that for a second. Now, let's not forget about security. While we're thinking, these high-performing machines, of course, protect at the highest level with built-in hardware to guard against modern threats without slowing your team down. When you need to get more out of your technology, Lenovo makes seamless productivity possible, and CDW makes it powerful. Learn more at cdw.com/LenovoClient. cdw.com/LenovoClient. Speaking of, I don't know, developers. Ignite's not a developer show, is it?
No, there's a developer component to it, yeah.
Ignite's a common.
Yeah, and this time it's personal. No, this time it's, it's sort of in person, but only for a very small group of people who will be going to the Seattle Convention Center. Those people will pay almost $1,900 for that option. If you choose. And I, you know, after 2-3 years away, I'm thinking a lot of people are going to be like, yeah, I don't think I have to go there. But it will still be virtual as well, right? So it's, I guess we'll call it a hybrid event. Anyway, you can register for that now. It is October October 12th through 14th. Why does that sound weird? It's in October, folks. But you can sign up.
Yeah. Right now.
But Oktoberfest is not in October, folks. So make sure you do Oktoberfest first.
That's right. It's confusing.
Yes. Oh, that's it, huh?
That's it.
Okay.
That's it.
I know. There's no session list yet. And the speaker list is up, and it's all the same people you know.
Is it online only?
Hopefully. There's some little pockets of in person, right?
Yeah. It might be. I wonder how they're going to handle this because some people, they're going to allow a small group there. Right. I don't know if they're going to handpick who gets to go.
I think they kind of are, right?
They'll just see how many people register or something.
You have to request to go in person.
Why do you need to be in Seattle? Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's in Seattle.
Yeah, we're not invited. Yeah. No press are invited.
No press. I know, that's curious.
Is that unusual?
Yep.
I would have thought press would have been the first ones invited, yeah. honestly.
Me too.
But... I've gotten kind of soft. I mean, not traveling for work. I don't know if I want to travel for work anymore. Yeah. This is such a common part of our schedule.
We're spoiled.
It's got to be a good reason, right? Like, it has to be some crazy good reason to go.
Yeah.
Well, you don't have to go anywhere, Mary Jo. The Google Pixel event, October 6th in Manhattan.
I know.
I would love to go to that. See, that I would go to.
It's in Brooklyn, isn't it?
Yeah, sorry. It's in Brooklyn. You're right. Yes. At that Google store, that pop-up store.
Brooklyn is still sort of New York, isn't it?
It's technically New York. It's a borough. But I said Manhattan. It's not Manhattan. It's Brooklyn. Let's get it right.
Yeah.
You can now... Okay, one little bit of developer news. Just a little taste of developer news.
Right. So some people are probably familiar with something called the Windows Package Manager. This is WinGet, right?
This new thing is great. I want it to be
command line. Yeah.
I want it to be more
package
and more.
Management system. Yeah. So Microsoft is adding more to it over time. So one of the things they've added to it is .NET. And actually, this is a pretty good way to acquire .NET, I have to say. I tested this on one machine. It's pretty seamless. Basically, you just go to the command line. So I should say WinGet is just built into Windows now. So if you have Windows 11 at least, it's just there. You don't have to download it from the store or from the web or anything. It's part of the operating system. And from a command line, I used PowerShell through Windows Terminal. You just type winget search Microsoft.net, like Microsoft period .NET. And then it will show you all of the versions of the .NET SDK and runtimes that are currently supported to download. It's actually several of them. I'm kind of surprised. So it's .NET Core 3X, .NET 5, which is no longer supported, .NET 6, which is the current version, and then .NET 7 in preview, and it's SDK and runtime both. You can pick and choose which you want. And you can obviously download multiple versions. .NET now does side-by-side, so that's very easy. And it will you can check for upgrade. You know, as you upgrade through WinGet, if you just type WinGet upgrade, any packages you've installed through WinGet will be updated if there are updates available. So it's fairly seamless. This sounds like a, you can make your own little dev box this way.
Right, and this is what developers are used to from Linux. Yeah. And, Package Manager should install it all. I like WinGet. I like the idea.
Yeah, the guy who invented it and was ripped off by Microsoft liked it too. But
we don't talk about him.
But,
Didn't they smooth that over? That's all smoothed over
did
now.
Did they?
I don't know. I'll ask
him. I guess they did.
Well, let's just say no one's talking about it anymore.
Yeah. That means they settled somehow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To the satisfaction of both parties.
The matter was settled, let's say.
Yes.
Good. That's good.
That's all you can say.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to do an Xbox thing.
Mm-hmm.
Mary Jo is going to go get everybody ready, and then we're going to do your questions.
Okay.
And that will do in both the Discord. So if you're in Discord, go to the open mic room. And anybody in there, we might put you on the air. I don't know. And then, that's it. That's all I have to say. And then that's it. But first, Hexbox, Paul Theroux.
This is actually some big stories this week.
Oh, good. I'm going to go get some lunch, and I'll be back in an hour.
I mean, they're going to go quick, but there's some big stories. So, no, it's okay. You may leave.
Thank you.
I'm not going to drag this out, but I'll
drag it out, please.
Take the time it requires.
I'll interject and add some wisdom.
Good. Thank you, Mary Jo.
There you go. So, if you've been following along with the Halo Infinite drama, you know that 2 years ago, this game was about to come out, but then Microsoft delayed it for a year. And it desperately needed that extra year. But then when it arrived a year ago, it was also woefully incomplete. Microsoft said, no worries. We'll update it over time. We got this. We're going to do this and that and the other thing. They kept delaying. They delayed the new seasons. They delayed new features. Back in, I think it was August, they announced that split-screen co-op was not coming. It's turned into kind of a debacle. And I've never really written or talked about this, but there have been calls for Microsoft to take Halo away from 343 Industries and maybe give it to another game studio, that maybe these guys are just not have not done a good job with it. Although what I should say, 343 has done a tremendous job with the Master Chief Collection. So, and the Halo television series also happened on their watch. This was something that was supposed to happen a decade ago. It finally did happen. I think they did a pretty good job with it. I'm not really sure. But in the middle of all this drama, Bonnie Ross, who's the head of 343 Studios Industries and the person most directly responsible for Halo Infinite, announced abruptly on Twitter that she was leaving the company. And she said that it was because of a family medical issue, which, we hopefully is not. I mean, it sounds serious, unfortunately, and we don't know if it's her or someone else and what it is. We don't know. But the timing could not be worse. In the midst of people calling for someone's head, she has stepped up to the plate and said, I'm leaving. And
But you don't make up the family medical emergency. I mean, that would be...
Yeah, usually, right. It wasn't to spend more time with my family.
Yeah.
but it's still... It's a tough one. So there's no way to really know. I mean, I hope whatever is going on in her family is something that can be solved and has a good outcome. I don't know.
But today I saw on some sites, I can't remember where, because I don't pay that much attention to Xbox. Sorry.
It's okay.
Somebody else at 343, like a director of engineering, is leaving now.
Weird. And he said, my grandmother died. And they're like, Bob,
it looks bad. It's like, okay, is everybody jumping ship because some big thing is about to happen? Like, what's going on, right?
I think anything is on the table for 343 and Halo right now. I this is creeping into disaster territory. Now, I must have said this on a previous podcast. It just sounds familiar. But I feel like video games have become a bit like movies. Nope, that's actually the opposite of what I meant to say. Video games are a little different from movies because movies today don't last for a long time in the theater. They have kind of a big blowout at the beginning, and then they disappear. But video games, good video games, like Halo Infinite, potentially, could be in the market for a long time, and they get updates over time. Microsoft's done a good job of that with other games, Gears of War, Sea of Thieves, and so on. Flight Simulator actually is an excellent example. Minecraft, I could go on. Anyway, the point is, this could have long-lasting power, but there's also that thing that could happen where if it's a disaster out of the gate, like Xbox One, you never really recover from that, and you don't want to do that with your marquee title. This is literally the most important game franchise that Xbox has. It's not even close. And that might weigh heavily on the decision makers at Microsoft, so we'll see. Anyway, I hope Bonnie Ross's family's okay. I don't know anything about that.
And one of the commenters on your blog said, gave her credit for keeping Halo continuing after Bungie took off. Microsoft didn't really have any plans for Halo, but she convinced them to keep working on it.
The Master Chief Collection is the type of thing where you kind of release, if it's feature complete and all that, you release it and you're done with it. You don't really think about it too much more. But they updated that a lot over time, and they added new features. They added high-res options and so forth. And they've kept that kind of fresh. And so if you're a Halo fan, I think overall you can't feel too bad about it. But Halo Infinite is tough. I mean, it's, Halo's not like Call of Duty. They didn't come out with one of these every year, right? So it's a big deal when you release a Halo. This one did not go as well as it should have, especially given just the kind of the general quality of the game. It's like the kind of like, you know, remember they did the Star Wars prequels, the first one, The Force Awakens, was kind of a nice return to form, the other two or whatever. But the first one, it was like, oh, that's cool. Look, Star Wars is back, And it should have been like that, And it was in some ways, but I don't think they landed it. Another big bit of news. I'm surprised we didn't talk about this last week. Maybe I must have written about it right after the show or something. But I did talk about the fact that the UK Competition and Markets Authority came back to Microsoft and said, there's no way we're approving this Activision Blizzard acquisition unless you make some concessions. And I guess you couldn't find this, but the head of Xbox said publicly somewhere, I can't find this, but he said that he had agreed that they would support Call of Duty on PlayStation for 5 years past the current agreement in response to this. The current agreement expires, by the way, three versions of the game later. So it could be 4 years from now. But the head of Sony PlayStation, I should say, the head of PlayStation, came up publicly. His name's Jim Ryan, sorry. He said, yeah, that's not what they said. He said, they told us that they would support it for 2 more years, which is very different, right? So here's the thing I don't understand. This just goes back to the conversation we had previously. You just support Call of Duty on PlayStation. Why would you put a limit on this? It's like, you know, Microsoft would agree in the past to produce Microsoft Office on the Mac for 3 years or 5 years or whatever they agreed to at the time. It's like, if it's a big deal, like the Mac at the time was not a big deal really in the scheme of things, but in the scheme of Call of Duty specifically, but also just video game consoles in general, you don't ignore the PlayStation. What are you doing? Like, yes, put it on Xbox. Yes, put it on Game Pass. Yes, make it better if you're on Xbox, if that's what you want to do. But you don't ignore PlayStation. Like, I don't know what's going on there. So we'll see. We'll see whatever actually happens there. But that's a big one. The rest of these are not as big, but still important to note. If you're an Xbox fan, you know that Microsoft spent the second half of the Xbox 360's lifetime and the entire lifetime of the Xbox One trying to get these things to run at an acceptable speed, specifically the dashboard. There was just something about the Xbox dashboard where this thing just did not run fast. And with the Xbox One in particular, I remember they used to keep changing the dashboard so that to get to a certain point took fewer steps, because that was the only way they could make it faster. Like, they couldn't actually make the thing run faster. I don't know if it was Electron or whatever. But with Xbox Series X and S, I feel like this isn't quite the problem it used to be. But now they're actually going to insiders and they're saying, hey, look, we want your feedback. We're going to start throwing out some ideas we have for a change that will happen a year from now. Based on what you say, we either will or will not implement these changes. So if you're in the Xbox Insider program, starting with the Alpha Skip Ahead ring, you're going to start seeing some new layouts. You'll be able to provide feedback, and maybe a year from now, we'll all benefit from it. I look at the screenshot of this thing, and I'm like, yep, this looks like the thing I'm using right now. I don't quite see the big deal there. Discord fans who are on Xbox will be happy to know that the on-console version of Discord now supports voice chat, which is a feature, which is one of those things I'm like, this wasn't the case before. What were people doing before? Like, they had Discord on their PC and they were talking to people that way? Maybe. I don't know. But anyway, Discord integrates, as you probably know, with Xbox, with the consoles. And so now it supports the voice chat feature. So you can talk to people over Discord while you're playing games together. Exactly what it sounds like.
We're going to use that in a minute.
Yes, we are. Not the one on Xbox, but I guess you could be on Xbox, maybe.
I guess so. I don't know.
I've never used it on Xbox. And then lastly, GoldenEye 007 is arguably the first, the first console third-person shooter. Let's call it the first successful console third-person shooter. Third-person? First-person, I'm sorry.
And notably, cooperative mode.
Couch mode. split screen. So it sort of kicked off the notion that you could play these games on a console. Eventually, not long after Call of Duty made its way to consoles and I think blew that door open. But a lot of people point to GoldenEye 007, which was a Nintendo... What was it? Nintendo Wii game? No, it was before the Wii. It must have been a... What was this?
Gosh, that's originally a good question.
GameCube? 64? I don't know. It was 2000. It must have been like 2000 or late 90s.
It was
90s,
Pierce, right? Brosnan was 007, so that'll give you some idea how old it was.
Yeah, the movie came out in 1995. So actually, this game came out in 1997. So it was the Nintendo 64. Jeez, that's a million. Oh, my God. Incredible. Anyway, yeah, long time ago. So split screen multiplayer modes.
This is going to be 4K. You know? They've totally remastered it, which is really
right. Cool. I'm sorry. So we've been talking about the game, but what's happening to it? So it's coming to Xbox Game Pass, which is amazing. So it's a remastered version of the game. You're going to be able to get it on your console if you just want to buy it. It's also coming to the Nintendo Switch if you have that. And it was just announced just a couple of days ago, I guess, on the Nintendo Direct live stream. So that's pretty cool. We don't have an exact date. We don't know what the price is going to be if you want to buy it outright. But if you have Game Pass, you will be able to play this ancient, like Quake-era console shooter game.
Awesome.
I've never played it.
Wah, wah, wah. Golden Eye.
I don't think that's the...
You shoot the guy, and then he shoots back at you. Wah, 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 wah. I think, before I sing any more, this is my incentive to get you to join us in the open mic room.
Oh boy.
It's time to go
How do we do this?
To our listener questions. You don't need to do anything, my friend. Nope. I am going to start with a question that we got just seconds ago. I asked her to be on the live thing. She wouldn't do it. She says, I'm camera shy. Blair Madison 11 in our Discord says, does anyone know what's going on with the Windows Insider beta channel? I'm queued for unenrollment on the next major release, yet I'm still getting new builds. I thought the 2022 update was done. The window, did the window slam?
It's not open yet, right?
Oh, well,
okay, yeah. So we mentioned our confusion earlier. So the beta and the dev channel technically are targeting post 22H2 right now.
Yeah.
So, and they're not tied to a specific version of Windows as of yet. My suspicion is that beta is being used to test features for Windows 11 that will come, you know, over the next several months, like after the release of 22H2.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that dev is sort of what it's been for a little while, which is, yeah, we're testing features, but they may or may not happen. We don't, you know, we don't know when, and maybe for something next year. You know, we've been talking about moments, and we don't know how they're going to market these kinds of things, but there'll be a 22H2 release, and then there'll be, just like we saw this past year, other features will occur throughout the year. So my understanding is that, well, not my understanding, my guess, my educated guess is that that's what beta is. But that raises an interesting point because there's a feature in Windows where you could get out of the Insider program once that version is released, but it's not tied to a version.
I know. You know
maybe
what I'm betting?
Be.
They've got, I bet whenever 22H2 starts rolling out to the mainstream, which is rumored to be soon, right? There's going to have to be an opening in the magic window thing, right? Like where they say, okay, everybody, now's your chance. Get in, get out, move around.
They'll let you in the UI pull out of there and go back to stable or go to one of the other channels. Yeah. So
there has
they've
to
done
be
that.
A chance, right?
They have. Well, they've done it in the past, right? So that makes some sense too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They don't call
We're
it the magic
though.
Window, though, so don't look for that.
that's my term. That's
your Paul Thurrott TM, magic window.
Right.
Web 3431 in the IRC. Could you ask Paul why he thinks Xamarin Forms and Maui are a mess?
Oh, because I've used them.
Yeah.
He knows. Yeah. No, Maui is much improved, but you have to... the original Xamarin Forms is a car crash. It's terrible. It's just really bad. It's just tossed together. It's amazing that they got it to work at all. I think the problem is that, well, we'll see how I've just started looking at Maui. I mean, Maui is really designed to create the same kinds of apps. This is a mobile app framework. It's not a desktop app framework, right? It doesn't matter what the thing you're making is called. What I mean by that is the controls are all the types of things you would need for mobile apps. So lighter apps. It's definitely better. It's a little simpler. There were real issues around where you had the assets and the formatting of those assets for the different platforms that were supported, Android, iOS, and at the time, Windows Mobile, right? UWP, so also desktop. But yeah, you know, we'll see. I just feel like it's a lot of catch-up and that there are more sophisticated and modern frameworks that do the same thing and more, like Flutter, for example, which supports more platforms than Maui does and is much further along.
Let's go back to the Discord, and we're going to head into the voice channel where the handsome...
Oh God, it's like the Brady Bunch.
Kev Brewer is ready and waiting to ask a question. Kev, go. He's Mr. Faff, by the way. Go ahead, Mr. Faffinator.
Right. It's about the Windows 10 versus 11 compatibility issue. I know they said they'd released or relaxed some of the specifications regarding the processors, but there was also a question about the security updates as a result. You may or may not get them. Do we know since that was passed if anything's changed?
Well, no. Nothing has changed. I don't expect them to formally come out and say, you know, we're going to support older hardware generations, right? So I have, in fact, I just wrote this part of the book. So it's an easy matter to install Windows 11 on a system that doesn't meet the hardware requirements. So I tried this on a couple of different computers, but I stuck to 6th and 7th generation Intel Core processors. I would never personally install Windows 11 on a computer with less than, you know, well, 8, or honestly, 16 gigs of RAM. But, you know, I the notion of putting it on a computer with 4 gigs of RAM and 32 gigs of storage is kind of ludicrous to me. But you can bypass that. TPM, same thing. You know, if you have TPM 1.2 or newer, it will work fine. But the issue you're asking is, would they ever, you know, not deliver security updates? I cannot imagine. They will not come out and say, we will never do that. No. Right?
Nope.
I think that's a legal thing, but I can't imagine they're ever not going to deliver security updates at the very least.
Right. Right. And the reason they say it's not supported is they're trying to discourage people from doing that. Right. But it's kind of like they're leaving a window open saying, if you're technical enough, you know how, okay, go ahead. But by saying it's not completely and officially supported by Microsoft, they're keeping a lot of business customers from doing this, right? Because that's businesses exactly are right. Like, no, we cannot take that risk. Like, if there's even a small risk, we can't get the security update, we're not doing it. And so they're kind of forcing businesses' hands. If they want Windows 11, they're going to have to upgrade the hardware if it doesn't meet the requirement, right?
The way I would... I'm sorry.
A year old, and this setup requires 11, and it's only the chip, I think it was 7th on this one. That's the reason I wanted to...
Yeah, so you as an individual, I would say, first of all, it's very easy to do, to get around that limitation. It's interesting because there's a registry change you make to the Windows 10 PC. It's not on the Windows 11 setup disk, although I think there's a way to do that as well. But the easier thing to do is just go into the registry on Windows 10. It's a single change. You reboot, setup just works after that. It will warn you one more time, like, hey, we know you're doing it. Are you sure you want to do this? That kind of thing. But you're technical enough that if a year down the road, Microsoft came out and said, surprise, we're actually not going to deliver updates anymore. Your computer's not going to be secure. You could go back to Windows 10 on that computer, maybe sell it or give it away to someone else and do what you want to do on a different computer then. But I really don't think that's going to happen. We can only make an educated guess. But I based on their behavior in the past with things like Windows 7 and 8 product keys working to activate Windows 10 and now 11, and that's never gone away. I can't imagine. There's no reason for them to be malicious like that to a few individuals. It just doesn't make sense.
Well, that's great. Doesn't sound like too much of a faff after all. Thank you.
No faff.
It's not much of a faff.
Let me thank you for your active participation in the Discord and especially in the Windows Weekly. Kev posts all the links to the show notes in the Discord channel. I really appreciate everything you do to help us out here.
I'm happy to help.
Thank you, Kevin. Please. Thank you. Let's see. I don't know. Do we have any other questions?
We have a question from someone who can't speak it because he doesn't have a quiet background. Okay.
Yeah.
Robbo, this is a fun question. If Microsoft gave you a marker and a whiteboard and said, draw the ultimate Windows computer, what would you be drawing?
Question.
And are you designing something for a home user or an enterprise person?
Love it.
That's a good one. You know what I'm going to say, of course.
It should be attached to your thighs.
Yes, it should be lappable for sure.
It needs a little clip on the bottom that just clips right onto your legs.
It would be kind of cool if you had like a little pouch on the side where you could just whip it around.
A sling.
like a guitarist when they swing their guitar around their body.
Just swing it over and then you're just like, da-da-da-da-da. Yep.
Perfect. That'd be cool. Yeah.
But I say it has to be light. Has to have at least a 13-inch screen and a really good keyboard. Yeah.
And good battery life, yes or no?
Good battery
life, for you. You're talking about a computer for you.
I am, because I'm
the problem and the benefit of the PC industry is there are so many choices, and matter what your needs are, there's something out there for you.
There is.
I will say, you know, over time, my wants and likes and so forth have evolved, you know, and changed. We talked about the touch thing on laptop screens and all that. This year has been interesting because, like I said, a lot of convertibles for some reason, which I only use as laptops for the most part. This year has been the year of 16-inch laptops. I have five of them. Yeah, wow. I have five in my house right now. I know, it's crazy. By the way, some of them are convertibles, which is crazy. But as I get older, and I'm not traveling as much, right, that bigger screen is awesome. And a lot of these computers now have, you know, Dolby Atmos, and you watch a movie on this thing, and it's incredible. It's better than my TV. And, you know, for working, which is the normal thing I would do on such a computer, just having the bigger screen. It's just like phones. Like, the bigger screen is nice. Like, it's kind of evolved for me. So I would definitely go with a laptop.
I'd also be interested in a cool all-in-one kind of thing for a kitchen that's designed specifically for a kitchen.
That so sounds like it needs touch.
No, you know? You could do it without touch. Maybe voice. How about voice? No, like you're
voice
making
is even
a recipe.
Better. Yeah.
Right? And
yeah, but that's like
right
a that's
now,
a that's a
it's
battleship
a
approach
specialized
to a
market. I know.
Right, but why wouldn't you get a Google or Amazon smart display or something like that, right? Wouldn't that solve that problem?
You could. I don't know. I think it would be kind of cool to be able to have a full PC where you could, if you needed to, look up your work. Look up something for work, but also something that was ruggedized enough not to get greasy and not to get like destroyed if something spills on it. You know, remember in the old days, Microsoft had those home design studio on campus. And one of the things they had was a PC built right into the counter that was like inside the counter that you could see when you could call it up when you needed to see it and pull up things like recipes.
There was the Windows 8 time frame. There were computers that were designed for kitchens or for other places in the house like that. And Lenovo made, I think, I believe it was a 27-inch, it was basically a 27-inch tablet. The idea was you would dock it and use it like that way most of the time. But you could, if you wanted to, bring it around. This is probably not accurate, but you made me think. I have seen screens on a wall in a kitchen twice that were connected to a computer, and both of those times were Microsoft employees. I probably have seen more computers in kitchens than that. This is just what I remember. But
Honeywell, that was like a you may not remember this, but Honeywell designed a kitchen computer back in the day. I don't know if this is exactly what you're looking for, Mary Jo. Let me see if I can pull up a picture for this.
I think it has to be voice, though, right?
It was because it was in the 1969 Neiman Marcus catalog. And it was basically a table with a computer built into it. Let me just have to open this in a new tab.
Kind of like the big table.
Wasn't there a gesture-based feature where you could wave your hand over a screen?
There you are, by the way.
There I am.
In your beautiful outfit, in your apron.
Yep.
Your full-length apron. Nice. With the Honeywell kitchen computer.
That's unbelievable.
Which is rather large. But there's plenty of room on it for your basket of vegetables you just picked from your truck garden.
It'd be neat if that thing could double as like a scale so you could measure items.
This was a horrible era, by the way, 1969. Here's the tagline. If she could only cook as well as Honeywell could compute. Her soufflés are supreme. Her meal planning, challenge. She's what the Honeywell people had in mind when they devised our kitchen computer. She'll learn to program it with a cross-reference to her favorite recipes by Neiman Marcus's own Helen Corbett. Then by simply pushing a few buttons, just a few, obtain a complete menu organized around the entree.
Was this thing $10,600?
$10,600.
Which in today's dollars is probably like $3 million or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
That's crazy.
But good news, it comes with a two-week programming course. So you're going to learn Fortran.
You know what would have been better for this woman is if she got a job. You know, and didn't have to
or
do this.
Take that course
thing.
And then started up her own kitchen startup. Wow. That is a
your
kitchen.
Your husband's
going to
want a martini when he gets home, too. Yeah. So let's.
Yeah. And take off that apron, honey.
let's get moving on that.
It was only 1969. It wasn't even that long ago.
That was the best year ever for music, though.
71.
Oh, I don't know, Leo.
71 and 73.
I don't know. You know, the Led Rolling Zeppelin Stones released 4. Three albums in that one year alone.
I know. Who am I to argue with a guy who has a music night every week?
Exactly.
I have a question. Can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Unless, did we get Paul's? We didn't really get Paul's.
Well, there was actually, there was one question I saw earlier.
But we didn't get your design for your ultimate PC.
Oh, no. It changes. You know, it evolves over time. Okay. This year, it's a 16-inch laptop, you know.
Yeah. No, my question comes from the radio show, and I maybe got this wrong, because somebody said, I just installed 22H2 on Windows 11, and now I have to use a Microsoft account to install. Is there any way around this?
So given that that's not out yet, and...
Well, whatever. He installed some version of Windows 11.
Yeah, and, okay. Yes, so the answer is yes. There's
you
a way
you still it. Recommend that Rufus thing
I
works.
Do not recommend Rufus for that. No, I don't. No.
Okay. And it no longer works to take it offline. I think that it just says, no, you have to go online with your Microsoft.
I wish I could just say, my book will be available soon. And it has three different methods you can use to get around what I call a setup annoyance.
But you know, you no longer recommend the Rufus method.
Rufus works. I think it's just not the most elegant of those solutions.
Yeah. It's an ISO installer. Probably everybody's familiar with that. Yeah. You build the Windows, install ISO Rufus with it, and it has some checkboxes.
Yeah, Rufus is disabled. Quick. That's one of the things I really like about it. The trick is you can actually bypass the network requirement, which bypasses the Microsoft account requirement. So you can do that.
On the home version.
Yeah, it works with either one, and either version of Windows 11 too. But the thing is, you know, rather than overthink this, like one of the other things you could do is just use the Microsoft account no@thankyou.com.
Right. That's the one I mentioned.
That will fail immediately. That works fine.
Yeah. Okay.
For kind of normal people, if you just want to get by, a normal person would never want to get by this, but you could just sign in with a Microsoft account. Create a local account, make it an administrator, sign into that account, and delete the Microsoft.
That's what I
account.
Said. Create a dummy account and just use that.
That works. Yeah. That works fine.
Yeah.
But no@thankyou.com will do the trick.
Yeah, that's a kind of cool.
I dread the day when that no longer works, but that for now, that does work.
All right. That'll do. That'll do, Pig. That'll do.
I saw one earlier in the Discord, I just want I don't have a good answer for this, but someone asked earlier why when you search OneDrive it won't search within OneNote files, and I can't say like why has Microsoft never made this feature work? It should work. That's ridiculous. OneNote files are not exactly like documents. I think it could be a little tricky on that note. You can obviously search from within OneNote. But those things are not indexed by search. So it just doesn't work. I don't know why it doesn't work. It seems like the type of thing that should work and would work. But it does not work. So there's no good answer to it. It's just, you have to open OneNote to search. There is a OneNote on the web, right? So if you're on a computer that doesn't have OneNote, you can still get to your OneNote in OneDrive using, you know, from OneNote.com or just from the OneDrive menu, we'll have it in there as well.
King Wing 27, did you have a question for Paul and Mary Jo?
I do.
Yes.
Do we have any updates on Neo? Because that is a product that I'm interested in that has disappeared.
I could tell you what Zach Bowden said, because he's been really tracking this. He said it's dead.
Neo was the larger version of the Duo that ran Windows instead of Android.
Yeah, originally Windows 10X, right? Was it? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It was made for 10X.
Yep.
And that's why think it's gone, right?
Yeah.
Because 10X
is gone.
There's
no reason a product like that couldn't run Windows 11. I think the logical to successor to that, it's not going to be a dual screen device. It's going to be a folding device. So,
yeah, me too.
Those things are very expensive right now, obviously. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the first gen Lenovo ThinkPad Fold X1, I think is the full name, that is probably the closest, you know, stylistically, size wise, that whole thing, where, you know, you have it in that laptop formation and the hardware keyboard sits on the bottom just like it would have on Neo. It's not quite full size, just like it wouldn't have been on Neo. But you can also detach it, put the screen sideways, and instead, you know, you won't have the seam in the middle anymore, which is kind of nice. And just use it in that wireless configuration. So, I mean, I would look at that, but Microsoft will have a Surface event at some point, right? I mean, there's a Surface laptop, I think 5 we're waiting for, and whatever else. And I'll be interested to see what they have to say about dual screen devices, because they pushed that so hard for a couple of years there. And it'd be interesting to see if they just never mentioned it again. I think that would be telling. But we'll see. Yeah, but no, nothing official on Neo for sure.
There are no active rumors I've seen about them coming out with anything like the Neo this year or even next year.
Yes.
Nice. Yeah. Newman, go right ahead. Thank you, King Wing. Hello, Newman.
Hello, Newman.
There hey, guys. Flipped my video on here for you.
Yeah, thank you. It's nice to see people.
Quick That's question great. For Paul. Yeah, it is cool. Quick question for Paul. I was kind of surprised you didn't know that GoldenEye was for N64. What was your first multiplayer video game then?
Well, I played Doom, you know, back in the early 90s on PC, so I was lucky enough
Remember,
to work
he's
for college.
Old, Newman.
Okay. Well, no, so just, I mean,
he
Doom,
may have
when
played
it,
but
out,
for him to remember it, that's a lot.
Doom was. Doom
I was
was
trying to be
internet.
Nice, but.
You were
okay,
trying to be nice, I know, I can tell.
Stay focused. Doom required like an IPX, SPX, net, whatever it was called, network. That we had that at the college. We used to play this on Saturdays and at night. On
oh, you
network,
could play so. Multiplayer Doom.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It
oh,
was fantastic.
I didn't know that.
But I went through every one of those games, you know, Duke Nukem 3D, Quake and Hexen and Heretic and blah, 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 whatever. But for me on the console, I mean, I can't actually remember exactly what it was, but Halo was a big pull for sure on the original Xbox. And that might be it actually. But I didn't switch to console until the 360 came out for 100%. And then Call of Duty 2 was the big one, a big launch title for me.
We used to, at the Screensavers, we started with Marathon, which was from Bungie
also. On the Mac, yeah. Yep.
And it was on the Mac. We used to have LAN parties. It was actually really fun to have a TV show with a whole lineup of people on computers playing Marathon. And they used to have fun with me because they'd say, come on, go in there, Leo. And then David Prager would have set up like 8 of them with rocket launchers around me.
You know,
and then I'd come in and they'd all launch the rocket launcher at the same time and blow me up straight up into the air. Oh, that was great fun. But I did enjoy that. That was my first experience of a LAN party.
3 Arena on the Dreamcast.
Yeah.
But that game was unique because you could play it with a keyboard and a mouse on the Dreamcast, which was much better than the controller.
We played Unreal Tournament on our Ultimate Gaming machine.
Oh, my God.
That was so much fun.
Unreal Tournament, all those kids. And
what about you, Newman? What was your first multiplayer?
Oh, I was a Counter-Strike kid. We would do that hack where you could put it in LAN mode, and then there was software you could run on your computer to tunnel that through the internet.
Hamachi.
And that's how we it was Hamachi or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was Counter-Strike.
There was a service that put Doom online that I can't, it wasn't Duango, but it was some weird name like that. And they eventually did Duke Nukem. Same thing, like in the early days of the internet, you could play these dial-up games.
Right.
And we used to have like the phone, you know, crooked in our neck and we'd be on the computer.
Do people still do LAN parties? Like you would go,
I do.
Do you?
Absolutely. Yep.
What do you play these days, Newman?
Oh, whatever's current. Usually we go back to Counter-Strike just because it's a classic.
It's perfect.
Or Halo. Yeah.
We used to do...
Or Gary's Mod, right? You ever do Gary's Mod?
No, I'm trying to get my friends to buy that. That's still
it's so much fun.
It's so much fun. I tell them.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll get there.
If I hadn't moved, I'd still be going every month down the street to a friend's house to do LAN party. But it was
I remember
Xbox.
You used to do that. That's right. You do Xbox parties. You bring your Xbox.
That group still does it.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Hey, Newman, nice to meet you. Where are you from?
I'm from outside Philadelphia.
You play that electric guitar behind you?
Nah, I can't play a tab at all. It was a gift, and I just haven't gotten around to learning.
You gotta learn it, man. You're young still.
Yeah, you gotta get into it. Yeah.
And what's your T-shirt? I'm trying to decipher it.
Oh, this is actually funny. It's making fun of electric vehicles, but way back in like the
it's
early
2000s. It's a car 2000s, with a regular little, old Rayovac like, battery in it.
Yeah, and it says 100%. And then under, it's like an outline of a Ford GT. It says 150%.
Uh-huh.
And this is don't charge, supercharge.
Nice.
But now that I own an EV, it's way faster than the supercharged car that I sold for it. So I love wearing this around town when I'm driving.
Yep. Anytime I see somebody driving around with a Cobra, I say, want to drag?
Yep.
Anytime. Yeah, right. And nice. They don't want to, right?
No, they know better. Yeah. Hey, Newman, nice to meet you. Thank
they'll
you
make more
on.
Noise than you, though.
Oh, thanks, guys. Take care. Will.
Take care. That was fun. It's nice if you get your... You know, I know not everybody's got a microphone and a camera and all that stuff, but you've got that setup.
It's nice when it works.
I love it when it works. I really do. It's really great.
Well, thank you for your questions. I think we should take a break and go to the back of the book. What do you guys say? Does it seem all right? Did you get enough? Did you get your fill? Did you get what you wanted? Okay.
We did.
And it was fun. It really was fun.
I'd like to return to that first topic we discussed and maybe beat that to death for a few
minutes. Rant some more. No more ranting. I'm going to tell you about ClickUp. This would be good. This would be good. What would you do if you got an extra day every week in your work week? More time to cook healthy meals, work on that novel, or in my case, play a little more Garry's Mod, or Valheim with the buds. That's a fun, by the way, fun game. But who has time, right? You got a job. Well, that's what ClickUp's all about. The productivity platform that will save you a day a week on work guaranteed. That's amazing. ClickUp started with the premise that productivity was broken. There were too many, I don't have to tell you that, too many tools to keep track of, too many things, and they're all in different siloed ecosystems. There has to be a better way to get through the daily hustle. ClickUp is the one tool to house all your tasks, projects, docs, goals, spreadsheets, and more. Use the tools you're already using, but you get them all in a ClickUp. ClickUp's amazing, and it could be a team of one. It could be just you. It's, you know, productivity still matters, even if maybe more if it's just you, or a big team, 1,000+. ClickUp is packed with features and customization options that no other productivity tool has, so you can work the way you work best. And it doesn't matter if you're in project management or engineering or sales or marketing or HR. You just set it and forget it. They create a more efficient work environment, and of course, you can customize it to your heart's delight as well. Join more than 800,000 highly productive teams using ClickUp today. How do you get started? Well, it's easy. Go to clickup.com. Use the offer code WINDOWS. You'll get 15% off ClickUp's massive unlimited plan for a whole year, meaning you could start reclaiming your time for under $5 a month. A whole day a week. That's nice. Sign up today at clickup.com. Offer code WINDOWS. Offer ends soon. Don't delay. Thank you, ClickUp, for making a great product that's easy to use and really does what it says it'll do. And for all of you listeners and viewers, all you dozers and winners, please use that offer code WINDOWS so Paul and Mary Jo get credit for this. ClickUp.com. Offer code WINDOWS. C-L-I-C-K-U-P. ClickUp. Thank you, ClickUp. Now we click over to Paul Thurrott.
I have a request.
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. I have a request. I have a super hard stop at 4:30.
Let's do yours first.
Do we have time?
No.
Do me first.
We should have been doing this all along. Ladies first. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Mary Jo Foley's Enterprise Pick of the Week.
So my pick has to do with a project at Microsoft that's called Azure Space. I've seen some people joking about what this means. Does it mean Microsoft is sending Azure into space? Not exactly.
We actually, believe it or not, we had the Azure Space guy on Floss a week ago.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, man. That's awesome. So today they had a big announcement for Azure Space. They're adding some new satellite-based connectivity services to their portfolio. The newest one is called Azure Orbital Cloud Access. And the way this works is it helps companies or, you know, not just satellite vendors, but also enterprise IT companies prioritize their traffic across fiber, cellular, and satellite networks. Interestingly, who is Microsoft working with on this? SpaceX. That's surprising, right? But SpaceX is the main partner here. Starlink coupled with Azure Edge devices is how this all works. And this is now in preview as of this week. Microsoft also was talking today about Azure Orbital Cloud. Azure. They've renamed a bunch of these now. Azure Orbital Ground Station. They describe this as ground station as a service.
Wow.
I know. Yeah. They're doing all these different kinds of satellite connectivity. They emphasize this is not just for the satellite industry. It's also for anybody who needs remote access, high bandwidth needs. So if you're in that group of companies and you want to check it out, you might want to see what Microsoft's doing in Azure Space.
Space. Very cool. And watch Floss
Weekly from last week because they had the guy in charge.
Oh, that's super cool.
Yeah, I can't remember his name.
All right.
Enterprise pick number two.
Okay, this is super cool. I think if they can pull this off. Brian Dam, who is a Microsoft MVP, put a pointer up to this on Twitter this week. PatchTuesday.com. If you go to PatchTuesday.com, it's a group of people who are they're publishing the latest patches from Microsoft that come out on Patch Tuesday, but then they want to test them and report their findings monthly to tell you if there are problematic patches.
Hallelujah.
I know. Right. So they're just starting to put this together. They want the community to work with them on this. So if you're a company or an individual who is kind of fed up with how Patch Tuesday works, or you care about how Patch Tuesday does or does not work, you might want to join forces with these folks and help them flesh out what they're doing with Patch Tuesday.
Nice. PatchTuesday.com. Yeah. All right. Give us a beer and then we can get you out of here.
All righty. It's that time of year. It's like we're starting to see pumpkin beers and Oktoberfest beers. So I thought I'd start making some of those beers. I know. It's already pumpkin beers started coming out in July, which I hate. But Oktoberfest beers are kind of cool. And this week, my pick is from Grimm Brewing in Brooklyn. They make a Marzen style beer called Festooning. Another good word, like faffing, festooning.
Faffing and festooning.
Yes. So Marzen beer, it's a Marzen, a typical Marzen beer. It uses German Vienna and Munich malts. It's kind of like a light amber in color. Tastes like a combination of honey, bread, very light, caramely kind of flavor. And as I point out, it's only 6%. So you could festoon with a few of these if you wanted to have a few. Not a big beer. Just like Marzens are these really light, nice, delicious German kind of style beers that are, I think, everybody would enjoy.
Festoon with the best of us.
Yes.
Grim Festooning. I like it. I like it. Yes. Thank you, Mary Jo Foley. Get out of here.
Guys.
Go
Sorry
away.
I gotta run.
No problem at all. Thank you.
Ta-ta.
Mary Jo Foley, allaboutmicrosoft.com. There she goes, ladies and gentlemen. Are you going to the funeral? She's going to London. I know where she is going.
That's it.
She's got a flight.
Heading over
She's
right
going
now.
Right now. Okay.
Oh, boy.
Right. Meanwhile, bye-bye. I'm stuck with little Paulie Thurrott.
Sorry.
And his no. And
well, now that you've all been drinking, you'll enjoy my tip.
Pick of the week.
I'm gonna try to. I don't know if you probably don't have Teams for work on your computer.
No.
So I'm going to try to.
Thank God, no.
Play the audio through my microphone. But Microsoft reached out to me just as the show was starting, and let me see if I can just read the way they describe. Okay.
It can't be. I mean, I have Teams, but it has to be the Teams for work.
I think it has to be Teams for work. Yeah. Okay. So I'll play it through my microphone. I think it will work. So I don't know why, but. This is the description. It says, in a world dominated by video calls, we're all familiar with the sound of an incoming Teams call. Today, we're disclosing something that will make these calls a bit more exciting.
Debatable. But that's just what inspired, I want. Sure.
Inspired by artist and content creator Candy Moore's original Teams ringtone called Remix, we teamed up with him to make it available in Teams. And to my ears, what this sounds like is a remixed version of the original Skype ringtone.
Oh, no.
And so you can find, if you're on Teams, you can find this now. You click on your profile picture in the top, manage account, go down to calls, and then it's under ringtones, it says calls for you. The default choice is called default. They have other ringtones. I've never even thought to change any of these. But now at the bottom, there's a new one called remix. So I'm going to move the microphone and see if I can make this work.
Oh, Lord. I'm getting a little PTSD right now.
So that's definitely a remix of Skype, right? Isn't that Skype?
It kind of sounds like it, yeah.
I think so. Anyway. So you can turn that on. That's my tip. I'm sorry. All right, but... right? Yeah.
This is it,
right? That's definitely
a
remix. They added a backbeat to it, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's Skype.
Yeah, I think so.
With a big bass.
That will be the only part of the Skype ever left by the time everything's said and done.
Here's the Microsoft Teams video that goes with it. As if you're at a show.
Oh, this is just like music.
You're at a rave.
This captures the energy of a typical Teams meeting perfectly.
They're all bobbing their heads.
Look at them. Look at them go.
Look at them go.
It's the Microsoft Teams rave.
This is why people throw computer screens through windows.
Wow. No kidding. No kidding. That's hysterical.
All right.
That's, but this that's next from one's Microsoft.
Awesome. My Epic is awesome.
Is it? Maybe not.
I don't know if you've seen this, Leo. This is awesome.
Let's see.
So there's a new mod for the original Doom called Voxel Doom.
Oh.
That adds actual 3D enemies, items, weapons, etc.
What?
Now, if you've played Doom, you probably know that when you walk around a dead character in particular, this is when you can really see it, that the sprites of the enemies and these other objects are just 2D flat things. So if you walk around them, you'll see the flatness. Like, you'll see it's literally just a flat thing in space.
Yeah.
Just, yeah, exactly. So what this does is it makes those things 3D. This is basically the technology that made Duke Nukem 3D, which wasn't really 3D either, more of an advance technically than Doom. So they've kind of added it back to Doom. To me, it actually I think it's awesome.
It's really a mess when you...
Yeah. But so this video does a really good job of showing examples of, you know, the original style and then versus the voxel version. And it also shows how he did it because the original models were just 2D. So you can't see the back of things.
Right.
But they're so perfectly done. It's so faithful to the style that it just looks natural and right. And the other thing is, you know, if you've played Doom over the years, it's funny, we just talked about Doom. So Doom in 1992 or 3, whatever year it came out, was whatever it was. But it was not, it wasn't real 3D. So if there were or enemies up on a higher space, all you had to do was shoot forward. And if there were enemies there, it would sense that you meant to shoot up and it would just kind of fake it. But there have been mods and updates to Doom over the years that have added things like mouse look, jumping and crouching,
right,
that kind of thing.
Right, right.
They have kind of made the 3D effect better. So this works with one of those things called GZ Doom, which is the latest version of what used to be called Z Doom, which is a way you run Doom on a modern computer. Now it supports higher resolutions and all that kind of stuff. You need a paid Doom or Ultimate Doom WAD, which is the data file. Which you basically
you've got to have it everywhere.
I mean, you can buy this thing for less than $5 right now if you wanted to from Steam. Sorry.
So when I saw the headline of this and I didn't play it, I thought maybe the whole thing was high res up, but it's still an 8-bit game. It's just that the bodies are now.
It's still the original game.
But, you know, but
think of all the advanced. All right, so actually in this video right now, you can see he's using mouse look to look around.
Yeah.
It's got a wide aspect ratio, which was not available in the original.
Yeah.
So now you point up to shoot up, right, which is kind of cool. It basically makes this,
more modern
shooter.
Yeah.
More modern, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. It's really cool looking. Yeah.
Details, did you put an article on your site about it or
no? I just added this right now. So if you search for Voxel Doom, you'll find it's V-O-X-E-L. I'm not sure if I will write this up actually, but I'm gonna play around with this. I'm intrigued by this,
and it's on the moddb.com page.
Yeah, it's free. It's and GZ Doom is free. The only thing you have to pay for is the Doom WAD, and if you pay more than $5 for that, you've done something wrong. So very easy to get into this.
It's small enough somebody could email it to you.
That's right. No, it's crazy. I bought this back in the day from them via mail. So I sent them a check in the mail and they sent me back floppy disks. I literally to Mesquite, Texas. That's how I bought this original Doom back.
Pele in our IRC says, I don't get it. I wish I understood the popularity of Doom. You wouldn't get it unless you were there and you had gone through, playing, Commander Keen and the Lost Planet Airmen and all that stuff. And all of a sudden Doom shows up and you'd never seen anything like it. Now, of course, nowadays it's like, but I remember how excited I was about Pong, and that will always have a lasting impression on me because it was,
I had an Amiga, game. So I knew what good games were like.
Right.
You know? My wife bought an IBM PS1, which was had four shades of gray. That's how many colors it had. And it had a tiny little screen and a nice keyboard, for the day. But the same company that made this game came out with something called Castle Wolfenstein 3D.
Yes.
And that game did something the Amiga couldn't do. It was in black and white on my wife's computer on a really low-end computer, which was raced through these 3D environments that looked like 3D environments, first-person environments. And I was just blown away by that.
That was John Carmack's genius.
That's right.
Right there in a nutshell.
Yep. So Doom is an evolution of that. Quake is a further evolution of that. Rage is a further evolution of that. And these guys, that guy created these gaming engines that were used not just by id, but also by half of the software industry.
It's the same reason you go to the Udar Hazy Space Museum in Washington, D.C., and you look at the Mercury capsule, and you go, wow. You know, it all started there. That's all.
Is this literally made of tinfoil?
It looks like
they took this thing to the moon?
Amazing, you know? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's all.
There was nothing bigger than Doom in the history of...
It transformed
PC gaming.
Our understanding of gaming, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Mr. Incredible. T, thank you. That concludes our...
We're down to Mary Jo somehow.
We're down to Mary Jo. I'm telling you, she's getting on that big bird to fly to London. I'm telling you, she's on her way.
I bet she isn't, but...
Well, you know, she really loves the royals. I don't know if you knew that about her.
That's true. She's kind of a monarch type.
We're just kidding. Mary Jo Foley writes for ZDNet at allaboutmicrosoft.com. Paul Thurrott has his own blog at thurrott.com. Mm-hmm. Thurrott.com, and his books, currently The Field Guide to Windows 10, soon to be The Field Guide to Windows 11, are at leanpub.com.
Indeed.
Every Wednesday we get together, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC, to do Windows Weekly. We invite you to join us. You can listen, of course, after the fact, because we put the show out as a podcast, so twit.tv/WW. There's a YouTube channel for Windows Weekly. There's also, of course, you know, you could subscribe in your favorite podcast player. But if you did want to watch us live, do that of a Wednesday morning, live.twit.tv. And then, you know, I think I love taking the questions. I hope we keep doing that. But nevertheless, we still interact with you both at the IRC. That's open to all, irc.twit.tv. And you heard us mention the Club Twit Discord. $7 a month gets you ad-free versions of all the shows. Access to the Discord, which is humming with activity on all kinds of topics.
It really is.
Oh, man, I was talking coding this morning. We had a great conversation going on with Greg Conrud and John Floyd, and it was really, really fun. But we talk about everything. Stacy's book club's in there. Paul's got a show in there that's club only, Hands on Windows. Micah has Hands on Mac. We have the Untitled Linux Show with Jonathan Bennett. The Giz Fizz with Dick DiBartolo, Stacey Higginbotham's book club. So there's a lot of stuff, activity in the club. There's a Twit Plus feed that's just for club members. So all of that, I think it's a great deal. $7 a month. Go to twit.tv/clubtwit. If you just wanted Hands on Windows, and if you listen to this show, you really should get that. You can get it by itself for $2.99 a month. And the reason we charge, these are new shows. They don't have ad support yet. So to defray the cost of creating these shows, to pay Paul and so forth, we either... You know, put it in the club and you pay for it that way, or you can buy it individually. But that's what it takes to get a show launched. And that's what we did with This Week in Space. And, you know, if everything goes well, we'll continue to launch more shows in the club and then eventually push them public. So you're helping us out a lot if you join. twit.tv/clubtwit. Paul, have a great week.
You too.
Cheer up. Frag some aliens. And I will see you next time on Windows Weekly.
I will.
Bye-bye.
The world is changing rapidly. So rapidly, in fact, that it's hard to keep up. That's why Micah Sargent and I, Jason Howell, talk with the people making and breaking the tech news on Tech News Weekly every Thursday. They know these stories better than anyone, so why not get them to talk about it in their own words? Subscribe to Tech News Weekly, and you won't miss a beat every Thursday at twit.tv.